You're live.
Good morning. It's October 25th, 2011. Welcome to the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors. Would you please rise and join us for the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you for being here. Madam Clerk, if you could be so kind to read some changes to our agenda, please.
Amended items to consent. A1, a request by Supervisor Patterson to reappoint Susan Mobile to the Santa Margarita Public Cemetery District. Staff is requesting the agenda be amended to correct an error in the spelling of Susan Mobile's last name. Her last name should read Mole. Item A5, a request to approve a contract with Data Arc LLC in the amount not to exceed $120,000, $20,000 for the current fiscal year, to convert microfiche documents to electronic files, all districts. Staff is requesting this item be amended to add page 1 of the staff report that was inadvertently left out of the packet when the agenda was being scanned and printed. Added item to closed session, 1, pending litigation. A, conference with legal counsel, existing litigation, 13, Pelfrey versus San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors. Requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement.
Okay, thank you, Madam Clerk. We're going to move into our consent agenda. I do have some requests to speak on consent, and I don't know if we got any more requests to speak, so we'll get them shuffled in as we can. I have Eric Greening on A6. And Mike Brown on A7, please. First two speakers.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and actually I'm going to touch on both 6 and 7 here.
Thank you.
On 6, I just want to remind us that we recognized, I think we all sort of collectively recognized an oversight in an otherwise thorough process relative to the arts community, and I think we all recognized that the arts community was there for its expertise and creativity to be tapped as part of the ultimate process and product. And so I just wanted to state that again for the record, since it was discussed in the hearings. Relative to A7, I think it might be welcome, especially if Mr. Brown is going to be also commenting from probably a different point of view, to explain just how this is going to integrate into what will ultimately be policies implemented by the Planning and Building Department and other departments. There have been a lot of processes in the past where lots of good ideas have been discussed, lots of good language has been discussed, and the county's way of doing things hasn't changed all that much. In fact, case in point, just last week, LAFCO approved the Sphere of Influence update for the Price Canyon area, that it's going to be very hard to see how that particular area of currently mostly agricultural land fits into any of our strategic growth parameters, any of our infill development standards, since it isn't remotely what you could call infill, and yet it seems to be the order of business. Of course, LAFCO is not the Board of Supervisors. Two supervisors serve on it, one of whom approved the extension of the SOI, one of whom did not, so it's a continuing dialogue. But unfortunately, it seems as if there is one world in which all kinds of good discussions happen about the way things maybe ought to be, and another world in which day-to-day decisions are made. And it seems like they are two different worlds very often. And so if there could be a little bit of discussion about how A7 is actually going to feed into the way things are done in this county, it would be welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Mr. Brown, followed by Gwen Taylor on A8, please.
Mike Brown, representing CoLab. I think I concur with the part of Mr. Greening's statement that it would be good to understand how these little projects in this grant do fit in with what's going on. This is a $400,000 grant from the State Department of Conservation to perform a variety of tasks. But what we fear is that this will be used to broaden and deepen the regulatory effort to promote dense urban living and foreclose rural and suburban living. Moreover, by restricting and removing existing development rights in rural areas, land values are undermined. It attacks the ability of farmers, ranchers, boutique operators, and other property owners to obtain loans, recapitalize their operations, fund equipment, and otherwise survive. This looks like a series of more and new tools to aggravate the process as it is. And I think, you know, you read the actual board letter and read some of the bureaucraties that's in there, it's symbolic of what's going on. So you have items such as the illustrative design model, which says create computer simulations and, quote, virtual tours of higher density development to illustrate how it could be designed to be compatible with local neighborhoods and consistent with strategic growth policies, or a land use economics study. This project will identify potential economic real estate and land use effects of possible measures to direct more growth from rural to unincorporated areas, as well as possible measures to encourage infill density in unincorporated communities. Well, you mean you've adopted all these other things and done this without sufficient understanding of that? Finally, you know, this whole project and the state grant is emblematic of a misplaced priority. You know, the state has funds to give you $400,000 for this, but not to help you with realignment for jail and transferred or new parolees coming into the system here. You know, but they do have money to undermine our ability to live in suburban areas, but they can't generate enough funds to incarcerate felons, fix the highways, or educate our children.
Thank you, Mr.
And you're
Brown.
Accepting the grant. Thank you.
Ms. Taylor, followed by Lindy Owen on A8, please.
Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor. As one of those who is paying the assessment district, I am very disturbed. The Board of Supervisors, and particularly Supervisor Gibson, can fully inform the property owners that are reusing the wastewater with meetings and information that the prohibition zone assessments are paying for, but he cannot hold a town hall meeting. Is that equitable? To inform those that are paying the wastewater project plus the cost of delivery of the recycled water to the property line of those who are accepting the water. How much money are the participants, meaning those who are receiving the water, to pay for the water? How is the water to be delivered? Where is the money going to be used if it is paid to the by the participants into the county? Is it going into the general fund? Is it going to be used to reduce the assessment district property owners? How is it to be used? How is the mitigation factor of less pumping of the Los Osos groundwater to be proven? Who's going to check it? Is the county going to check it? Are you going to take the word of the property owners who are receiving the water? Let's be realistic, shall we? Is this going to be cost-effective other than alerting and giving the Coastal Commission development plan when any participant can terminate the agreement for any reason at any time with no cost to them? We, the assessment district, are paying for this. How do they not pay for anything when we are paying the full freight? It is not cost effective, and it is not equitable. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Owen, followed by Jeff Edwards, please.
Good morning. Troublemaker from Los Osos. Actually, I'm not. I'm a community participant in a project that has a million flaws. This is just another one, and what the problem seems to be is that this is an agreement being set up to use the recycled water or a portion of it for ag reuse. It was an important part of the project, and of course it's getting underway because the project intends on getting underway. This is talking about a water delivery to six properties, about 220 acres worth of property. What's not really acceptable about this is it's pretty much nothing except a dry plan with no amount of they discuss in the Pavo Ogren discusses the water quality. He talks about the cost and the pricing, the quantity and the term, and there's nothing. There is no understanding about what any of that is. So you're basically, and then there's also the opportunity for the participant to back out at any time. So it's pretty much like saying, we have an important project, we need a certain amount of activity to make the project go forward. And then they wine and dine these people. They had like six meetings to, as the prior speaker said, we don't get meetings to explain our tax bill and, you know, how much more there is ahead and what we're getting for it. Not a single update in whatever 3 years. Yet we have meetings galore for these people. So now there's participants. They can turn around and walk away anytime they want to. We haven't really got an agreement. So this is just more of the flaws that are in this project and the reason that we come every week. Thank you.
Mr. Edwards, please, followed by Barry Brannon, please.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. Good morning, board members. My name is Jeff Edwards. I'm a 35-plus-year resident of the county. And I've been a longtime supporter of a wastewater project for Los Osos. So the item before you this morning, A8, is regarding the recycled water component of the project. And I'd like to remind this board that the backdrop in Los Osos is that our primary drinking water basin, the Paso Robles Formation, is experiencing rapidly advancing seawater intrusion. Presently, the public works staff is working on satisfying the conditions of approval attached to the project by the Coastal Commission. One of those deals with the recycled water. That's the matter before you. Once again, we see work that public works has advanced as being truly form over substance. They found six property owners that are marginal agricultural properties, and they want to give them the water, a portion of the water, and they're using as the reason a condition that we condition of the coastal permit that we provide 10% of this recycled water to agriculture. Well, the intent of that condition was that it have some offset or mitigation relative to the seawater intrusion. And these properties don't have any mitigation factor. So basically, I mean, we'd do just as well going back to the Tonini Ranch and spraying it into the air. I would submit that unless there is a positive mitigation factor for seawater intrusion, that a given property not be allowed to participate. Just that simple. If there's no benefit, don't give them the water. The real irrigated agriculturalists have declined offer of this water. And there's a couple reasons. One, as your board knows, the regional board is promulgating new rules for irrigated agriculture that are fairly onerous. And I don't even think these six properties that have signed up with these participation agreements even know about the new ag rules for irrigated agriculture. So once they learn that, they're out. I guarantee that. So, you know, these non-binding program participation agreements are just that. It really is really ridiculous, I hate to say. And there's reference to pricing. If and when any of these agriculturalists want the water, there's a subsequent contract, a delivery contract. That's when the pricing will be figured out. Well, I'm going to suggest to your board that we're going to have to pay these guys to take the water. And the real interesting part is that we're not like Monterey, and in the staff report, staff looks to Monterey, where their ag interests are right on the ocean. They're sucking seawater. Our ag interests have good quality water now. They don't need this recycled water, and they don't need the new rules that are attached to it. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Mr. Brannon, followed by Al Barrow, please, A8.
Good morning, Barry Brannon. I'm the most immediate neighbor to the new wastewater treatment plant site. I own 400 acres immediately north. We were probably, of all of the ag people, the most likely user other than the person who you're taking part of his property, Mr. Giacomazzi. I received the request for participation in this wastewater plant. I will tell you, as a farmer, the way the plant is designed, they use an oxidation ditch. They're not producing a water that would be quality enough that we dare put it on our crops. Mr. Edwards mentioned the fact that the new wastewater rule, new runoff rules that are coming to all farmers say that you're responsible for anything that runs off of your property. So here, the county, in this process, is asking us, farmers, to accept water that is not as equal to what our well water is. So we're receiving, in essence, a pollutant. The total dissolved solids that are in the water are not pinned down. They should not be better than what the dissolved solids are from our well water, because if we did it, we'd be polluting our property and therefore responsible for any runoff that would go into the bay. So this whole water quality issue is not defined enough that I could sign an agreement with the county. As I said, we have 400 acres. We're farming heavily. There are two other immediate farmers in the area that are farming agricultural heavily. We use lots of water. I cannot see that this agreement, this proposal, made any common sense. I believe that if there was a plant developed, if you used a plant instead of the outdated design of a wastewater treatment plant you're using that produces a low-quality effluent and does not really do what it could do, there's a plant in Santa Paula I wished I could get you to visit, and it produces a water that comes out of that plant that percolates into the groundwater, and the farmers can pump it and it's wonderful water. I've actually drunk the water that's coming out of the spigot at the end of the sewage treatment plant. But we haven't even looked at that. We're using an old outmoded plant design that costs more to build, produces a dirty effluent, and you're asking the farmers to take it on. There's no price. It just doesn't make any sense. And I hope that you'll spend some time to look into this further. There's been a lot of push. I was here the whole time when this process was changed. And the whole wastewater treatment design of the plant is poor, and that's why you didn't get participants.
Thank you, Mr. Brannon. Mr. Barrow.
Thank you. My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low-Income Housing. I agree with some of the previous speakers. The water quality is an issue for farmers, and it will plug the interstitial spaces in some of the soils. It will put deposits of salt in, which is typical of household water that there is residential salts in there, and that was a concern for Dr. Rohr, soil scientist, while he was here. And again, the issue about the plan itself, when you look at it and you look at the map, there's no right-of-way for the piping of the water. There's no costing of the water. There's no stipulation in any of the agreements. And as Ms. Owen said, it's not a non-binding, it's not even an agreement. It's simply that, well, we talked to the county and, you know, we would consider taking water. This does not really solve or address the requirements of the coastal development permit. So I would send this back to your staff and tell them that they need more specific details and they need agreements that have that. One of the farmers, the largest parcel, if you look at the map, is the Clark Valley Road farm that has the organic farm on it. And they cannot use that kind of water for growing organics. They only have 5 gallons per minute production in their water well there. The farmer that bought that land from the original owners had to use heavy equipment to break the clay lens because that area is on the rise. The horizon of that area is a very thick clay lens, and that's not going to absorb a lot of water. So I think you missed the boat in terms of you would like to do an offset with this reuse, and it's not offsetting anything because those people are not using that amount of water. I think you have to look at that. Thank you.
Thank you. And last comment on consent, Richard Margetson, please, and then we'll bring it back to the board.
Richard Margetson. People have spoken about a number of different topics in this document. I want to read some things specifically from the document that they're talking about. On page 3, towards the bottom of the page, after closing the reply period on September 30th, 2011, the Public Works Department had received 6 signed PPAs. These 6 properties represent over 220 acres, with approximately 80 acres currently in, or capable of converting to irrigated agriculture. There's no breakdown on what is actually in agricultural production at this point, and what portion and how soon in the future the rest of them may convert to agriculture. Now, into the actual agreement, recitals. Number 5, this program, and this is from your document, this agreement is only intended to demonstrate interest by the program participant in receiving recycled water from a supplier. Only intended. 6, this agreement is non-binding and will only become binding when a program participant takes delivery of recycled water through an executed agreement hereinafter referred to as the delivery agreement. Number 12, only program participants who execute this agreement prior to September 30th, 2011 will be eligible to have recycled water infrastructure up to their property line paid for by the wastewater project. What if somebody comes forward after September 30th, 2011 and wants to participate? Who pays for the infrastructure up to the property line? And number 14, the term of this program participation agreement will be indefinite. However, either party has the right to terminate this agreement for any reason at any time. So let's see. We install infrastructure at the cost of the wastewater project to be paid by the prohibition zone up to a property line for a potential participant in this program. And if they at some point down the road say, we don't want the water anymore, that infrastructure is in the ground and the cost is eaten by those property owners inside the prohibition zone who will be paying for this for the next 40 years. Nice agreement, gentlemen.
We'll close it to the public on consent and bring it back to the board and see if there's comments or questions. We'll go with Mr. Gibson.
We'll have staff speak to A8, please.
Okay. Mr. Patterson?
Yeah, A8.
Okay. Mr. Teixeira? And Mr. Meacham?
A7 and A8.
Okay. Let's begin with A7. Mr. Meacham, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could get staff or someone to, Mr. Stevenson, I see you're here. I need someone to convince me that this is a good thing to do. I'm teetering on the edge here of supporting this or not. And as you know, I did not support the smart growth policies, although I do the principles themselves, I understand those. But my concern is by adopting this and then I guess combining this with the suggested policies, I've got some major concerns here. So can you help me out here?
Thank you. Chuck Stevenson, planning staff. We came to your board last year in September seeking authorization to apply for this grant to the state, and we provided a justification for the different programs that we had anticipated covering the grant. The state supported those, our application, and awarded us with the grant. This was many of these activities that we're proposing to be engaged in are in a result of what we've heard from our communities about concerns for strategic growth. For example, a complete community survey is in response to a concern about providing full infrastructure in support of strategic growth. So we wanted to understand, in this case we're looking at four communities, San Miguel, Templeton, Napomo, and Oceano, about what the needs are for a complete infrastructure to support strategic growth, such as parks, bicycle lanes, better other improvements to that would support and enhance strategic growth. Others that we heard from our building industry had to do with reducing barriers for new subdivision development approvals for infill. So make it easier for infill for us, and we can probably accommodate more infill. So we're proposing to amend certain ordinances and standards that would allow for more infill development. We also heard from our communities difficulty in understanding what we meant by strategic growth communities. What would that look like? And so we felt that providing a computer visual simulation of a typical expansion area in a community would help to articulate and provide a visual of what we're really talking about. Again, a public outreach effort. The land use economic study is one in which we have heard comments from the public about what are the economic effects of some of the ordinance changes that we will be looking at. And we thought that this would be helpful information for decision makers and the public to understand potential effects of ordinance changes. And then lastly, your board supported, will be supporting, an update of the San Miguel Community Plan update, and we needed technical reports to prepare that. So these were largely in response to public concerns and understanding for what strategic growth would mean for their communities and other direction from your board specifically.
Okay, because two of the communities that you mentioned are in my district, and both of them did not support the strategic growth policies, and I'm concerned that if this is going to be a further clarification of this and an ability to understand exactly what the community wants as opposed to what these are going to be as far as enforcing them, I can support that. But I'm really questionable of where this is going.
Well, certainly, we are a community-based planning effort. We work with communities and understand what their concerns and needs are. So these will be in support of education and trying to explain better what strategic growth is for their communities. And keeping in mind as well is that we have a need for workforce housing. That's a clear need that has been for years. And we're not making it easy for developers to produce affordable workforce housing. We need to look at reducing barriers, making subdivision rules easier to follow so that type of housing it can be made available.
So as a result of this grant, what is the next step from this? Once you've done these, use the money to do whatever is going to be done with this, what's the next step?
Well, there are several next steps. One would be looking at revising ordinances, like I mentioned. So looking at easing some of the subdivision standards. The community survey, the infrastructure need will feed directly into the county's capital improvement program. It'll be another tool for you as decision makers to look at how to rank capital improvements in urban areas that would support your board's strategic growth policies. So that would be implemented immediately into your CIP program. Other information and data will make its way into our land use element update and our San Miguel Community Plan update.
Okay. One thing I just want to reemphasize, and we've had this discussion before about some of these rural communities. These are farming and ranching communities, And it appears to me as though far too often we try to design these as an urban setting, and they're not. And we don't find the means to accommodate, let's say, a horse trailer or a truck with hay on it. We don't provide any kind of an infrastructure for that. And it seems to me that the push towards urbanization is not what communities want in a lot of cases. So I'm a little bit concerned with this. Thanks.
These communities, San Miguel and Templeton, that you represent, both have downtowns, both downtowns that want infrastructure such as sidewalks and bicycle lanes. And if the if you're going to this is a separate thing from whether there's still going to be rural housing in these. This is about helping to provide the tools and the guidance to have flourishing downtowns, which is going to be good for any town or city. We see it. To me, the best ones in the county are the ones that have downtowns, including the city that you live in and that you were mayor of, that are really growing and that offer all the amenities for visitors and residents alike.
I don't disagree with that, but by the same token, when you mention the word infill, this sends a lot of people into a panic. They don't know what exactly do you mean by this infill and by this increased density. And we've gone through this. It was a really interesting discussion that we had with the Templeton project about infill and increased density. So I'm just not sure where this is going. I understand some of the concept behind it, and part of it I do support, but
And I think it's real clear in the staff report that's what these grants are about. These are about educating communities about what infill means. And if you support the principles of smart growth, and I think the distinction between supporting the principles and supporting the policies is a thin one, but if you support the principles of smart growth, we have made a decision to redirect future growth from rural areas more toward urbanized areas. And there are a lot of reasons for that, economic, affordable housing, all sorts of things. So these are important first steps, and that we have secured this kind of money to do it is a real feather in the cap of our planning department.
I disagree with you in terms of there's a thin line between the policies and the principles. I do support the principles, as I've told you before. But when you put these as policies, when we're gone, when we're no longer sitting in this dais, and then people decide that they want to do something, they're going to reference a policy, and a policy essentially becomes like a law, and I think that's what concerns folks.
Well, so I'd look forward to a conversation over the beverage of our mutual choice at some point.
Well, I think
I'll have a beer with you.
We always like that. Well, just so I can, and then we'll move on to the next items too. To me, the way to get the policies to actually work as well as we'd like them to. And we have had many good conversations and workshops with the community and with people who are home builders and developers, is to make sure that we really provide the kind of flexibility and we understand the kind of principles that are essential to a community's desire. I mean, we hear it from all the time. You know, you got to have parks, you got to have sidewalks, you got to have bike lanes and all those sorts of things, and that's what we want to do. So I think the principles are the way, better understanding the principles and better understanding what are the most important principles are the ways to make better policies. That's the only thing that I see.
Well, the last thing I'm going to say on this, too, though, is in regard to that, the principles, in my interpretation of when you have principles, those are pretty flexible. When you have policies, they can become more restrictive. So that's where I see the difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think these are important conversations to have. So actually, I'm glad to, even when we have small ones, because I think creating the policies that allow for the most flexibility and creativity of people who are doing these kinds of projects is essential, and I think we all agree on that. Mr. Patterson, did you want to weigh
in? Yes, I wanted to speak to that, too. I too, look forward to having the conversation about smart growth principles versus smart growth policies.
And I'm here with you, too.
And,
let's do it now.
You know, if Supervisor Meacham supports the principles but questions the policies, I think he can be a participant in developing those policies so they're consistent with the principles. But I have found in my tenure on this board that we cannot continue to develop the rural community the way we have, and I use the word afford literally. We cannot afford the emergency services and other county services like roads and infrastructure in the rural areas. We simply cannot afford to do that. It does not pay for itself. Mr. Brown apparently seems to think that the way to preserve agriculture is develop it. And I think true agriculturists don't feel that way. We need to preserve our agricultural lands and our rural character, and building it over does not do that. And these seven programs that are a part of this grant award from the state are essential to allowing us to develop the policies that will implement smart growth strategies, and I think it's precisely what we need to be doing so we can align the policies with the principles, and I look forward to getting the information over the course of the next year to year and a half that will allow us to develop our communities in a way that we can service, we can provide services for, we can provide the infrastructure for. The building community is asking us to do that, and we'll be able to provide the housing and the jobs and the services where they're most needed. So right. I'm definitely in support of this.
Okay. And just to final, before we move on, I think that we all agree that we know all the towns and cities want to have thriving downtowns, want to have good, vibrant downtowns, as good as the downtown here in San Luis Obispo, as good as the downtown in Paso Robles. Certainly Oceano and others would benefit greatly from having a nice downtown. So let's move to A8, and Mr. Diodati, I think, has been summoned to talk on this one, please.
If you would simply explain the relationship of the participation agreements with some next steps on the recycled water plan.
Thank you, John Diodati, Public Works Department. I'm going to quickly back up real quick and just talk about the coastal development permit that we're working under for this project. And what it required was 10%, at least 10% of the flows from the wastewater treatment plant to go to an area designated over the groundwater basin and certain properties identified in the groundwater basin. And we worked with the Coastal San Luis Resource Conservation District to outreach to those property owners, all identified in the permit, and establish interest in taking recycled water for their operations. And through that outreach, we and talking with the funding agencies, it was determined that these program participation agreements and then the full delivery schedule contracts was the most appropriate way to address handling recycled water and for this project. So what we have is property owners that are consistent with the coastal development permit and these agreements that are consistent with discussions with USDA and SRF and how they're going to handle the distribution of the financing. And what we have is, with any issue, there's going to be a diverse range of attitudes and knowledge on the issue. And so we wanted to do extensive outreach, partnering with the Coastal RCD to make sure everyone was engaged in understanding of what we were trying to accomplish, and then have these non-binding agreements so anybody who had even a slight interest could come forward and want to learn more and be part of the program for taking the recycled water. So we have the six program participants before you today that are very interested in the water. Those are who we're going to now work with in our next steps to define pricing, to define how much water they're going to get. And this is just right now. We're meeting the obligations of the CDP, as you heard from Mr. Brannon. He's not sure yet what the water quality is going to be, if it's going to work. Well, this isn't going to preclude him from in the future, after he sees this be a successful program, to come on board later in the future and start taking recycled water, or any other property owner that currently is in a program participation participant. They're going to have that opportunity in the future to take recycled water. So that's the format before you. These are the program participation agreements. Our next steps are now to work with these property owners. I met with a couple of them just yesterday. We're going to work on the final binding contracts for the taking of the water, and we're going to start designing the turnouts so they can have the water delivered to them.
And available for any questions, if you could. Supervisor Meacham?
Yeah, John, the design of the project is tertiary treatment. Is that correct?
Correct.
I did go down to Santa Paula. I did go visit that PERC water facility to see what they do. And it's basically a tertiary operation there as well, is it not?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Further questions for Mr. Diodati?
Just a couple of observations. And the technology used in Santa Paula is not less expensive than the treatment plant that's going to be put forward. It's considerably more, and it's more expensive to run. I think our experience, I would also reference that in addition to the RCD, we had gotten input from the UC Cooperative Extension and from our Ag Commissioner's Office. And, you know, the reality is as we've studied recycled water programs, there's always a reluctance to step forward, a certain reluctance to step forward. And the reality is that I think we need to demonstrate the success of this. This was the same thing that happened in Monterey County with their very successful recycling program. So with this, we're actually quite encouraged. We have secured the interest of way more acreage than we need to actually do the disposal, and recall that this is part of the disposal plan of this wastewater plant, and we need to do it. So we'll be moving forward.
I'll move approval of the consent calendar as amended.
Second.
Okay. Motion to move the consent agenda by Supervisor Patterson, second by Supervisor Gibson. If there are no further questions or comments, a roll call, Madam Clerk, please.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, with the exception on 7, I'm going to vote no.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
And Mr. Hill.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. We're going to move into public comment. And if you have any requests, please make sure they're in. So we have a couple of things to get to. Let me start with Eric Greening and go after him to Evan Sylvester, please.
Good morning again. I am Eric Greening, and it was good to hear Mr. Patterson's defense of agriculture and the need for a process that keeps it in agriculture as much as possible. The unfortunate thing about the LAFCO vote relative to the sphere of influence is that it essentially took away the county's voice and the applicability of Ag Policy 24 and the findings that need to be made under Ag Policy 24 for the conversion of agricultural land. Now it will primarily be a LAFCO and a city decision where other far less stringent findings need to be made. Anyway, that said, speaking of agriculture, I'm wondering how many people in this room, if they were given half a year's food, 40 acres a mule, had their family, and there was enough wood on the property, enough standing wood to build a house, and tools, farm tools, would still be alive in 2 years. Probably 150 years ago, you could ask that question of just a randomly assembled group of Americans, and a majority would have the skill base and the knowledge base to be alive 2 years from then by working the land, building their home and working the land. That would be extremely rare today. There may not be anyone in this room who could do it, even with their family. The reason I'm bringing this up is because the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, in speaking of centuries of stewardship of extremely and increasingly dangerous nuclear waste on our own coast, is assuming a kind of a cultural continuity, assuming a kind of preservation of today's skill sets that is not a safe assumption to make. That is one of the reasons why I am hoping that not just we as individuals, and I'm very grateful to Mr. Hill for showing up at that meeting and speaking out, but the county as a county needs to participate in the scoping and all the other parts of the process relative to environmental review of this proposal to extend for centuries the period during which this county, which centuries from now may not even be a county. Who knows? There may be people here, but who knows in what form they will govern themselves, what the technology base will be, what the knowledge base will be, what the culture will be. We need to plan for them anyway. Look at history, and you see what I'm talking about. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Mr. Sylvester, followed by Gwen Taylor, please.
Yes, Mr. Hill. Thank you very much. My name is Evan Sylvester. I've been involved with Occupy Slow for the past 2 weeks. very briefly, gentlemen, I just wanted to read for you, if I may, the mission statement for the County Board of Supervisors that I stumbled upon the other day online. The San Luis Obispo Board of Supervisors, the legislative arm of the county government, is committed to the implementation of such policies and the provision of such services that will enhance the economic, environmental, and social quality of life in San Luis Obispo. This immediately struck a chord with me because there are three words in that statement that resonate with me that are actually part of the mission statement for Occupy Slow. And that is to manifest social, economic, and environmental justice that is sustainable for generations to come. This movement, Occupy Slow, was largely formed in solidarity with Occupy Wall Street. We also have mission statements and principles that we believe in individually as well. A portion of the Occupy Wall Street mission statement reads, "Occupy Wall Street is a horizontally organized resistance movement employing the revolutionary Arab Spring tactic to restore democracy in America. We use a tool known as People's Assembly to facilitate collective decision-making in an open, participatory, and non-binding manner." A separate part of that statement reads, "We are the 99% that will no longer tolerate the greed and corruption of the 1%. The Occupy in the Occupy movement, as I understand it, refers to the call for socially conscious citizens to peacefully and legally assemble in public space, occupying it, in order to engage one another in civic discourse on the myriad of issues that we face as a society. Any occupation that we conduct as an organization in San Luis Obispo, we want to be safe, organized, well thought out and orchestrated, sustainable, and well presentable to the public in a way where we can responsibly engage our citizens. The occupation last week that you've seen in the front of the courthouse was an introduction to this concept. We are regrouping. We are hoping to come back here at some point within the near time frame with a better organized and cohesive message. And we are at the moment taking a break from the occupation in order to regroup and affect that message. So I just wanted to thank you all for your time and simply speak to some of the principles behind Occupy Slow, and just that we are very concerned of presenting ourselves in the proper way and conducting ourselves safely and legally. And thus far, we appreciate the participation, or at least the sympathy or the understanding of the need to peacefully assemble and to demonstrate our purposes and our principles. So I thank you very much all for your time, and I look forward to further public comment in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sylvester. Appreciate that. Ms. Taylor, followed by, I'm sorry, Ms. Taylor, just dropped my forms. Ben DeFatta.
Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor. And my husband and I, are part of the assessment district. This board needs to address an ongoing problem of saltwater intrusion and overdrafting of the Los Osos water basin. As a board or individual board members, it doesn't make any difference. We need help. A moratorium for development of any kind that requires water is imperative now. Do not depend on the ISJ to protect the Los Osos water basin. Has the Department of Planning ever issued a report on how many permits in Los Osos have been issued since the beginning of the financial downturn in 2008, and how many have been activated or approved for permit extension? There have been conversations of child care facilities being converted, 5-bedroom homes being developed, bootleg remodels with added bathrooms, as well as a project estimated to use more than 30,000 gallons of water a year just in a tree cutting project. The use of water from the basin continues with no help in sight from the board or our supervisor. The Medeiros report developed for the ISJ has many, many fatal flaws as a waste demand and water conservation management report. Assumptions are used in the report to justify water savings. It is just a draft report. It is 8 months old, and ongoing costs for the ISJ have been budgeted to the assessment district. There is action this board can take now to address saltwater intrusion and overdrafting of the Los Osos water basin. The ISJ is not the board's master. We need a moratorium now to protect our basin. When we don't have any water, is that when you're going to take action? Or when we have so much saltwater intrusion, our water is no longer usable, is that when you're going to take action? You have the ability to do something.
Mr. DeFatta, followed by Lindy Owen, please.
Good morning, Chairman Hill, Board, Sheriff. I'm Ben DeFatta from Los Osos. Due to late breaking news, we see that the grand jury found John Wallace and the Wallace group guilty of conflict of interest. How long does this county think they can get away with the corruption that exists in this county and with self-investigation, cronyism, good old boys club? Letting our District 2 supervisor, who's supposed to represent Los Osos, be judge and jury on deciding the building of the most expensive, unaffordable, antiquated, not-so-green, energy hog, stinking, gravity collection sludge maker in the country. Him and his sidekick, who used to work for the only bidder to build this sewer, is ripping us off big time. Get rid of the dead wood that exists here. Going back to my original Sunday night speech, a few days ago, Turkey, suffered a 7.2 earthquake, and at this reading, probably 1,000 are dead and enormous damage to property. The same thing could happen here any minute, any day, any month, or year. A particular attention was brought out by Senator Blakeslee 6 months ago. He wants a seismic study made near the Pacific Gas and Electric nuclear power plant located in the middle of where at least 150,000 people reside. We don't need a seismic study. Just shut down the nuclear power plant and convert it to a natural gas power plant. It's no stretch to the imagination of the catastrophe to life and property that could happen here. Like the rolling of the dice, at some point, snake eyes will show up with disastrous report results. And last night's news was talking about all the debris that's coming across the Pacific that's going to hit the West Coast. Your board's predecessors only thought of the taxes the county was going to generate. It didn't even bother to think about the damage it would cause this area if there was a seismic mega event. They didn't even think of where to dispose of the spent fuel rods. They just thought of the income. I find it ironic that both Senator Blakeslee and Supervisor Gibson claim to be geologists, while Blakeslee has voiced concern about seismic activity along the coast on the Pacific Plate. Our District 2 supervisor hasn't said a peep about the damage a megaquake would do to man and property in this area, and especially to the sewer project in deep pipes in Los Osos. Senator Blakeslee is right in making sure this power plant can withstand a 7 or 8 earthquake, while Mr. Gibson doesn't care about one bit about what damage a megaquake would do to a big pipe deep trench gravity collection project in Los Osos yet to be built. Now is the time to change to a shallow trenched small pipe system. The majority of the people in business, thank you.
Thank you, Ben. Ms. Owen, followed by Al Barrow, please.
Microphone working? Good. Good morning, Lindy Owen from the Los Osos Prohibition Zone. A small community where 5,000 septic tanks are accused of polluting. I'm not from Atascadero, where 5,000 septic tanks are not accused of polluting. Anyway, I wanted to welcome the Occupy Slow and the slow group. I think it's, we don't do something now, when are we going to do something with a broken government? And I think the branches are healthy, and I hope that they can help bring a better outcome to local politics also. You will be, Also invite people to go to calcoastnews.com, the August 11th posting. You will be horrified about what Jim Grant and this Board of Supervisors did not do in the way of an investigative study into wrongdoing between their public works director and the one of the major players in the Los Osos CSD. And this board accepted that investigative report. I'm sorry to hear that. And then I wanted to go to an ideal. Again, we've been accused of just coming here because we're full of hot air and we like to listen to ourselves. But the reason that we come here is because there is a better sewer, and there always has been a better sewer, because Montgomery Watson Harza and Mr. Pava Ogren and, I guess, Mr. Gibson have a close relationship and chose to go that direction does not mean that the better example and the better possibility does not continue existing. When you talk about piping, that's 70% of the cost of a complete sewer. We want to see the pressure pipes put in. They go 4 feet under. They go in the right-of-way. What's beautiful about them is that they are flexible during an earthquake. When they break, they spill treated effluent, not raw sewage. We currently have no raw sewage allowable into any of our drinking supply. It is going through a filtration system called a leach field. Now, the septic tank would exist, and it would pre-treat everything, and all we would have to do is hook the pipe up. A little pump runs for 15 minutes a day to run every day's treated liquid off. It goes out in a piping system in the right-of-ways. We don't tear up every street. We don't take five times longer to install it. What is so difficult about that? The most important part is, with an earthquake and these large pipe systems, you are condemning us to raw sewage in our drinking supply. And you've heard how little we have of a drinking supply left because it's been ignored for all these years. So please put the priority on drinking supply, and then secondly, put the next priority on making a safe collection system so we don't have raw sewage in that drinking supply. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Barrow, followed by Richard Margetson, please.
Thank you. My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low Income Housing. I have a some visuals to show you, which I sent you. First of all, this is just a brief statement about earthquake danger here. This is posted outside. That's all I wanted to show on that one. But I do want to show the map again. And this map is the map of Los Osos. What happened there? I don't know. Oh, thank you. So if you look along this shoreline here, about 5 miles off, there's two faults. One is called the shoreline fault, newly discovered, and the next one is called the Hosgree fault. This one is a 7.3 magnitude. This one is a 7.5 magnitude. Together, they could be a possibility of an 8-point magnitude quake. This is the line where the Los Osos fault goes east and west, and it bisects those. That's a 6.8 magnitude fault. That's right where you want to dispose of water at Broderson. That's practically on the community. The geographical center of the community is right here. That's probably a mile away. Last week I explained to you that there were clay lenses. This map is really inefficient. In the 2003 earthquake in December, the day afterwards, it was the 23rd, I rode my boat over here to this spot, and I noticed that there was a separation in the clay lenses of 2 feet. What's holding the seawater from going into our aquifer here? This is our aquifer, clay lenses. Those clay lenses go out underneath the sand spit. Our water supply was out there and was pumped down, and gradually salt water moved in to about this area. So what does that mean? That means that you're putting a gravity sewer, which requires a slope of a 16th of an inch to an 1/8 of an inch slope, exactly, to move the solids from the households. And that's just not going to work out if you have an earthquake. The ground lurching will separate some of the pipes. Some of the pipes will float because almost all of them are empty most of the time. And the buoyancy rating, you can see it on the website of engineers, is there. This is a very high-risk project. So what happens if you have an earthquake? You have to refit for the whole thing. You have to redo the whole thing. And that's just not a good plan. The other thing is the step-stag system. Adina sent a letter and said that they have an estimate between $12,000 and $15,000 a household for the complete system. So it's much too expensive as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow. Mr. Margetson, followed by Mike Brown.
Richard Margetson. Nitrate testing, first thing. We're still interested in having a round of nitrate tests done. It doesn't seem like the county's going to be receptive to having that done anytime in the near future, so we're going another avenue on that. But I'm going to actually bring back some video clips next week demonstrating the importance and the belief amongst the members of the ISJ group on the importance of those tests. Water conservation. The water conservation program for the CDP, you have a certain time frame that you have to get that out and get it started as a condition of the permit. We were told that the program would be sent to the Coastal Commission within the first couple weeks of October. We are now at the 25th. The Coastal Commission has received nothing from the county on this conservation program. And that may be because the Madawis 2011 water demand analysis and water conservation evaluation that was commissioned by the ISJ working group, which consists of S&T, the Los Osos CSD, Golden State, and the County of San Luis Obispo, was found wanting on some basic factual issues. One of them, gentlemen, that I think is probably in the process of being readdressed, is this document, paid for by the community, assumes that the water conservation programs that were highlighted in the report will save for the existing population, not the build-up population, but for the existing population, 600 to 700 acre feet a year. Currently, the consumers in the prohibition zone, which make up more than 87% of the consumption of the households in Los Osos, and I used a very generous number, are consuming approximately 1,700 acre feet total indoor-outdoor. Based on past analysis that 70% is indoor, 30% is outdoor, that would leave 1,190 acre feet of indoor use in the prohibition zone. 700 acre feet reduction from that gentleman leaves 490 acre feet of indoor consumption, somewhere around 25 to 30 gallons per capita. I think they have problems with it. I think that's not why it's being brought forward, and I'm very curious when it's going to be brought forward and when the corrections are going to be made, because the Coastal Commission is aware of these facts. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Brown, followed by Dr. C. Height, please.
Mike Brown, representing CoLab. You know, I think you need to be careful of your assumption that dense development is less costly than some other forms of development, particularly in the context of the Central Coast here. And just think of a 200-unit condominium project, either zero lot line or detached or attached units with, I don't know, 1,400 square foot units in it, some on-site amenities, and it will need a park, and it's going to impact firefighting. You need more sophisticated apparatus to deal with it if it gets going and so forth. versus several hundred, 2 million or 1.6 million estate houses or ranchettes or whatever spread over some random area. And the difference in the throw-off in the property tax per unit. And I think you need to study that. You know, you kind of studied it with the DEIR for the proposed ag subdivision rules, but it doesn't get it. Because if it were true, then why is it that places like Montecito and Hope Ranch and the Santa Ynez Valley, and I strongly suspect your estate areas west of Paso and west of Atascadero and down back of Arroyo Grande, throw a surplus. And I know from personal analytical experience that those estate areas are providing the throw-off for the vital locally funded county services in Santa Barbara County. And that money is exported to pay for justice in the form of DA and probation and the local share of the courts and all kinds of things to other parts of the county. In fact, somewhere around 3,000 square feet of house is the break-even point. And I think you really need to study it on the ground in the context of the Central Coast. Isla Vista is the densest area on the Central Coast. It is by far and away the most expensive service area in Santa Barbara County in the unincorporated area. So I think you really need to look at that assumption. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. And I would refer you to the economic development strategy where almost all the employers agreed that one of the biggest issues for their employees was to find smaller affordable housing, not estate housing.
May I respond, Mr. Chair? So I think that's true that in one way that vibrant rural villages of which there are examples in this county and some other counties are very valuable. But I think at the same time, it needs the mix. And one of the things I would strongly suggest to you, and I know others have suggested this, is that do the zoning and the flexibility for the unincorporated villages first. And let's see the proof in the pudding. What can you do in those villages? What will you allow to beckon that successful Cayucas, which exists, or Los Olivos, or Murphy's in the High Sierra? There are plenty of examples. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Dr. Height.
Dr. C. Height, Los Osos, a town that enjoyed huge success for the Open Studios tour. So the defamation of its people is not working. This is Encore Weekend, and I'm opening my Prohibition Zone garden again. People ask if I teach, what is RACU? If you're open to the lesson, the definition is ease and comfort. RACU, when the mechanics of technology and the practice of humans reach efficiency, we have RACU, ease and comfort. We may reach our destinations in a rather carefree manner by boarding a bus, or we may gain cooperation as we seek access to information. What we communicate may have characteristics of resistance or facility and affect others' accessibility. This is a very human choice as well as nature. RACU, the traditional firing process that produces the one-time use cups for the tea ceremony, accepts no resistance. The clay in form yields to the process of the fire and water or is broken. The rituals involved in producing and firing cups for the ceremony is not haphazard and is non-competitive. It becomes a matter of allowing excellence without striving for it. Persons of Western culture may recognize moments of ease and comfort by contrasting when their blood pressure becomes elevated with the environments that ease the symptoms of this tension. Though we all at times may seek the path of least resistance, we might not easily contribute to processes which are relaxed, thoughtful, or even meditative. The greatest obstacle to achieving RACU is human prejudice. We simply won't let others flow about and reach their destinations and goals while still feeling relaxed and good about themselves. We are a judgmental society, which shows that our human instincts to promote the survival of our kind over our neighbor's kind are still intact. I would not say that good instincts have never produced a beautiful and intuitive artwork, for it often has. For the most part, we are not creating art, but calamity and discord. Discord has its place, but not when you are the one seeking cooperation and a more melodic accessibility. Practical people detest inefficiency, no matter how lucrative the stumbling block of bias. Such people find ease and comfort in detecting the well-oiled mechanics and meshing gears of the spinning wheel. There is comfort in progress. Progress may be achieved when we show reasonable concern for facility in everyday processes. Such processes may be like the all or nothing, success or failure found in the traditional RACU firing technique. We may be literally testing the limits with our fellow man, dragging each other like objects from the fire to the tempering waters to see who survives. We may at times seek what we cannot personally give, moments of cooperation and participation in the community, than the human community that allows accessibility, ease, and comfort for all. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Height. That will close it to public comment, and we will bring it back to the board for our first public hearing. And as our staff is getting to place, Madam Clerk, if you would be so kind as to introduce it.
C1, hearings to consider five proposals to establish new agricultural preserves and amend an existing agricultural preserve.
Okay, thank you. I see Mr. Hogue.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. I'm Warren Hogue from the Department of Planning and Building, and this is the time of year that we bring the annual crop, if you will, of new ag preserve applications and amendments to your board for action so they can be completed through contract execution by the end of the calendar year. The five applications total about 932 acres that would be added to the program. Terry Waller will give a brief staff report on each item. Each item will require the opening of its own public hearing.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hogue. Mr. Waller?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Terry Waller, planning staff. The first item is file number AGP 2010-00011. It's a proposal by Jeffrey Van Ness to establish an agricultural preserve which will enable the applicant to enter into a land conservation contract. The property consists of 111 acres within the agriculture land use category and is located at 5850 Calle Las Colinas, approximately 1 mile southwest of the community of Creston. The property is located in the El Pomar Estrella planning area. This site consists of gently to moderately sloping farmland that has been used for dry farming and cattle grazing. The current use of the land is dry farming and cattle grazing. The property qualifies for a 100-acre minimum agricultural preserve with approximately 111 acres of land with class 4 and 7 soils that are described in the Natural Resource Conservation Service's soil survey as moderately to well-suited as rangeland. The appropriate minimum parcel size for the agricultural preserve is 320 acres based on the rangeland capability. The appropriate minimum term of the contract is 20 years because the site is located more than 1 mile from an urban reserve line and is not adjacent to a village reserve line. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission recommend approval of this request to establish an agricultural preserve. That concludes my presentation for this item.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Waller. Any questions from colleagues? I'll open it up to the public. I have no request to speak on this one, so I'll bring it back and go to Mr. Patterson.
Yes, I'll move tentative approval of item A.
Second.
Okay. Moved by Supervisor Patterson. Second by Supervisor Meacham.
Is it tentative or is it?
I think, and then we do them all together, don't we?
Is it a tentative motion?
Is it? I don't think it's a tentative.
Okay, I'll move that we approve item A, the Van Ness contract.
And adopt the resolution.
Permanent approval of it.
Staff recommendation. Put it easier that
second.
Way. Okay, so it's moved by Supervisor Patterson, second by Supervisor Meacham. A roll call, please, Madam Clerk.
Mr.
Patterson?
Yeah.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
And Mr. Hill?
Yes, thank you. Item B, Mr. Waller?
Item B is file number HEP 2010-00013. It is a proposal by the Gardner Family Trust to establish an agricultural preserve to enable the applicant to enter into a land conservation contract. The property consists of approximately 112.5 acres within the agriculture land use category. It is located at 7114 Orchid Road, approximately 2/10 of a mile south of Moretti Canyon Road and approximately 3.5 miles southeast of the city of San Luis Obispo. The site is in the San Luis Obispo planning area. The applicants obtained approval of a parcel map and a conditional use permit to allow the subdivision of this agricultural parcel of approximately 124 acres into three clustered residential parcels and an agricultural open space parcel of 112.5 acres under the provisions of the land use ordinance for minor agricultural cluster subdivisions. The subject of this agricultural preserve and land conservation contract application is the agricultural parcel, of course. The property has been used historically by the Gardner family for cultivation of irrigated row crops. For the past 5 years, between 71 and 99 acres of the 112.6-acre agricultural parcel have been planted in irrigated crops on a rotational basis with between 2 to 3 crops per year. The property qualifies for a prime land agricultural preserve with approximately 110.5 acres planted in irrigated row crops and irrigated hay. The appropriate minimum term of the contract is 20 years because the site is located more than 1 mile from an urban reserve line. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee recommended approval of this request to amend the agricultural preserve. That concludes my comments.
Okay. We have a question here from the board, and I also mentioned, Mr. Patterson, that Ms. Kirk is here on this item, and E, representing the landowner, if you have other questions besides staff. Mr. Patterson?
Yes, thank you. A quick question for Mr. Waller. In reviewing the minutes of the Ag Preserve Review Committee, I noticed that Ms. Bianchi commented that this property also is in an open space easement in perpetuity. And could you explain that?
That's how the cluster subdivision requirements work from our land use ordinance. And so basically they work together. So you have an agricultural preserve and a contract and also an open space easement, which would be coming forward upon recordation of the map. So basically that allows the agricultural parcel to be protected in perpetuity. And it's a requirement of our land use ordinance.
Very good. Thank you.
I guess that begs the question as to what the Williamson Act contract and preserve status would do for this parcel that the open space easement doesn't.
Well, initially what it did was it allowed us to recoup subvention monies from the state because that's the way we would do that under that status. If it was just in an open space easement, then we wouldn't receive subvention monies for that property. So it in the past has gone towards that.
Well, I think there is a question. If you look at the purpose of the Williamson Act, I suppose we'd have to, if we were looking at the bottom line, we'd ask the assessor how he would assess that parcel as an open space parcel versus how the assessment goes as a productive ag parcel. It's conceivable that the Williamson Act value is actually higher than the open space value, but that's not information that's in front of us at this point. I frankly don't know where to go on this, but it does seem odd that if we have a property that's conserved through open space perpetual, that easement is in perpetuity.
Yes.
Okay.
If I may, Mr. Chair, comment on that. I would think, I questioned the same thing initially when I read this as to why Williamson Act contract when we already have it conserved. And I would opine that the difference, assuming that we do follow through with the Williamson Act criteria, that a difference would be that in the Williamson Act contract it would continue to be farmed or ranched, whereas in open space, depending on the conditions of the open space easement, I don't know if that would necessarily be the case.
Is that an affirmative requirement, if I might? Yeah. Is it an affirmative requirement of the Williamson Act contract that it continue in ag production?
Yes, it is. And I might remind you that this is ordinance-based. It's not unique to this property. Any ag cluster subdivisions that come before your board will be subject to these requirements. And it being an agricultural cluster subdivision, it is the intention to keep the open space parcel in agricultural production.
Okay. Let me open it up to the public, and I have no requests to speak and see none coming, so bring it back to the board. If there are no further questions, I'll go to Mr. Teixeira.
Thank you, Chairman Hill. Move to approve the Gardner Family Trust Ag Preserve.
Second.
Okay. Moved by Supervisor Teixeira, second by Supervisor Meacham. There are no further questions. A roll call, please, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
And Mr. Hill?
Yes. Thank you. Item C, please, Mr. Waller.
Item C is file number AGP 2011-00001. It is a proposal by Bruce Attig to establish a agricultural preserve to enable the applicant to enter into a land conservation contract. The property consists of 320 acres within the rural lands land use category and is located on the northern side of Highway 166, approximately 20 miles northeast of the intersection of Highway 166 and Highway 101, adjacent to the Cuyama River. The site is in the Los Padres planning area. This site consists of steeply sloping hillsides with gently sloping valleys and hilltops that are used historically for cattle grazing. The current use of the land and the intended future use is cattle grazing. The property qualifies for a 100-acre minimum agricultural preserve with approximately 123 acres of land with Class 6 and 7 soils. A site evaluation determined that approximately 123 acres of the site was moderately suited as rangeland. The appropriate minimum parcel size for the property is 320 acres based on the rangeland capability, and the appropriate term is 20 years. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission recommend approval of this request to establish an agricultural preserve. That concludes my comments for this item.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Waller. Any board questions for Mr. Waller? No. Okay. No board questions. I'll open it up to the public. I have no request to speak on this one, so I'll bring it back to the board and go to Supervisor Teixeira.
Thank you, Chairman Hill. Move to approve staff's recommendation on item C, the Attig Ag Preserve.
Second.
Okay. Moved by Supervisor Teixeira, second by Supervisor Gibson. Roll call, Madam Clerk, please.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
And Mr. Hill?
Yes, thank you. Item D, please, Mr.
Item D is file number AGP 2011-00002. It is a proposal by Larry Keller to establish an agricultural preserve to enable the applicant to enter into a land conservation contract. The property consists of approximately 388 acres within the rural lands land use category and is located at 1175 Upper Los Barros Road, approximately 4 miles north of Napomo at 1175 Upper Los Barros Road. The site is in the South County planning area. The site includes approximately 388 acres, of which 280 acres are open grassland surrounded by oak woodland and chaparral on the steeper areas of the site. The landowner, the Keller family, has been using the property for cattle raising. The two natural springs provide water to the property. The property meets the current eligibility requirements for a rangeland agricultural preserve and a land conservation contract since it has more than 100 acres, that is approximately 230 acres, of Class 3, 4, 6, and 7 soil that's been described in the Natural Resource Conservation Service soil survey as moderately to well-suited as rangeland. The appropriate minimum parcel size for this property is 320 acres based on the rangeland capability, and the appropriate term is 20 years. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee, as well as the Planning Commission, recommend approval of this request to establish an agricultural preserve. That concludes my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Waller. Questions for Mr. Waller on this item? I see none, so I will open up to the public. I have no request to speak and see no one coming forward, so I will bring it back to the board and go again to Mr. Teixeira.
Thank you, Chairman Hill. Move to approve item D, the Keller Ag Preserve Project.
A second.
Okay. Moved by Supervisor Teixeira, second by Supervisor Patterson. A roll call, please, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
And Mr. Hill?
Yes, thank you. And finally, item E, Mr. Waller.
Our final item, item E, is AGP 2010-00014. It is a proposal by Catapult Vineyard to amend an existing agricultural preserve to decrease the minimum parcel size for conveyance of parcels from 320 acres, the current standard, to 160 acres. The property is located in the agricultural land use category between Peachy Canyon Road and Kyler Canyon Road. That's 2555 Peachy Canyon Road, approximately 5 miles west of the city of Paso Robles in the Adelaida planning area. The property has planted with 71 acres of irrigated vineyard, which is centered on the middle of the property. The purpose of the request for reduction in minimum parcel size is for possible future estate planning. The amendment would formally recognize the intensification of the property from rangeland and dry farm to irrigated vineyard. The property qualifies for a reduction in minimum parcel size from 320 acres to 160 acres because the property has been intensified with vineyard, 71 acres, and this is on Class 2, 4, and 7 soils, as allowed by the rules of procedure. The appropriate term for the agricultural preserve is 20 years, and the Agricultural Preserve Review Committee, as well as the Planning Commission, recommend approval of this request to amend the agricultural preserve. That concludes my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Waller. Question, Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Waller. Just to confirm that the in changing the minimum parcel size for conveyance, we also reset to a 20-year contract from wherever it is right now.
That reflects the action of the recommendation of the Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Committee.
Because it's currently under contract right now.
Yes,
something
is.
Less than 20 years, but
yes,
we reset
it is. It's
to
running
20,
at and nine and
okay, so it's
between 9 and 10
and
years.
It's in road. Okay,
exactly.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. No further questions. I'll open it up to the public. I see no requests. I have no requests to speak and see no one coming forward, so I'll bring it back to the board for Mr. Meacham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would make a motion for staff recommendation to approve this agricultural preserve for amendment number 4.
Okay. I'll second.
Okay. Moved by Supervisor Meacham, second by Supervisor Patterson. Roll call, Madam Clerk, please.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
And Mr. Hill?
Yes. Thank you. We're going to take a quick break before our next item.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes.
And I know that we've been in discussion about the Williamson Act and the criteria for that. When will we be coming back and discussing that further, Mr. Hogue?
That's coming back to you on November 8th.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you. We will be back. Let's take a quick break because we do have some items and a cattleman's lunch to get to. So 10:40, if we could. Okay. Welcome back to the Board of Supervisors. We will go to our next item of business, and if you would introduce it, Madam Clerk, please.
D1, consideration of a request to, one, authorize a budget adjustment in the amount of $785,000 from the Flood Control General District Reserves to fund flood control mitigation measures for Zone 1, 1A in Oceano. 2, approve a sole source engineering contract agreement in the amount of $68,070 with Philip Williams Associates for sandbar management assistance. And 3, authorize the Public Works Director to approve amendments to the agreement in the amount not to exceed a contingency of $6,000, 4th District.
Thank you. I see several, Mr. Benedict, Mr. Hutchison, and then Ms. Ogren. Who am I going to first? Who
wants I'm going to lead off, Chairman.
Okay. Mr. Benedict.
Good morning, Chairman Hill and members of the Board of Supervisors in the audience. I'm Dean Benedict, the Utilities Division Manager. I have with me today Mark Hutchison on the dais, who will be discussing some of the environmental issues associated with our update on the Oceano drainage and flood mitigation efforts we are in process of. Just a brief summary, we have been to your board several times regarding establishing priorities of Meadow Creek and Rio Grande Creek. We have brought alternatives and priorities to your board in the past in July and provided some cost estimates and identified seven work priorities in the last meeting that we were here in September. Today's update, we wish to accomplish several things. As you see in your board package, a recommendation for a budget adjustment for the seven work priorities. We'll give you a status of all the efforts. There are quite a few other efforts we're also working on and have been completed. And we also will review permitting requirements. And as we discussed in the recommendation, we're recommending approval of a sole source contract to assist with the sand breaching and the environmental permitting and management of that process. And Mark will address those in a few minutes. The seven items that were identified in the last meeting involve three at Meadow Creek, at the lagoon, and three at Aurora Grande Creek channel. I'll try to make sure that as we discuss issues, Meadow Creek Lagoon is separated from Aurora Grande Creek Lagoon because even in our internal discussions we get confused as to which lagoon we're talking about. So I will talk about these individually as we go through them. The status of the seven projects, I'm going to kind of jump around here, but item number 2, 4, and 7, which are the temporary levee protection that you see in green, the vegetation maintenance project, and the Delta Street the Delta Street raise, are completed or scheduled to complete with our current funding. So these projects are moving ahead. We have done a couple of them in the past, as you're aware of. I won't spend any more time on these unless you have questions regarding them. I want to focus on the other four projects that I'd like to talk about today. I'm kind of looking at this as a 4+3 program. Three of them are basically done and funded. The other four we basically need funding for. So I kind of address them this way. The first of the four projects that remain that we need to address is the raising the north and south levees west of the Union Pacific Railroad, or effectively west of 22nd Street. What this will do is it will bring the levee locations in this area higher, closer to the original elevations that they were designed to. Our current status is that we have developed plans, and we are actually ready to field stake elevations to implement this. We have coordinated with our county roads forces, and we're actually, some of our utility staff is going to be assisting the roads forces in moving ahead with this levy raise if it's approved for funding today. Environmental document has been completed, and what this will do is it will maintain the north side height of the levy a little bit higher than the south side, and this project will reduce the potential for overtopping of the north levy west of 22nd Street, which is the greatest risk to the sanitation district and the Metal Lagoon area, which, of course, contributes to the Oceano area flooding and the other areas north of the levee. The second of the four projects that we want to implement in advance today, we're calling it the berm on private property or the berm on the wrap property. Actually, as we've kind of refine this a little bit, it's become really a regrading project on a two-acre parcel that's owned by Mr. Rapp. And we have a design done for this. We're modifying it right now. It was kind of worked out in the field with Mr. Rapp. We do have a right of entry from him to go ahead, and we have a process to go ahead and proceed with this through purchasing to get this done relatively quickly. We're going to go ahead as with a contractor. We're proposing that a contractor do this work for us. And what this project will do is we'll provide additional flood protection to the mobile home park area, if you will, should there be a large overtopping of the levee system north of Highway 1 in this vicinity on the north side of the Aurora Creek levee, Aurora Grande Creek levee, excuse me. This will provide long-term protection also as it will sort of trap the water that might otherwise come right through the area north of the levee and go through the mobile home park area.
The next of the third of the fourth projects that we're coming to your board with is a sandbar management program, and I've asked Mark to address this as one of several items.
On the line. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mark Hutchinson, Environmental Programs Manager, Department of Public Works. Regarding sandbar management, as you can imagine, in looking at the aerials and maps of the area, we anticipate that being able to control the height of the sandbar will be critical to dealing with water levels in both Rio Grande and Meadow Creek lagoons, and could be a key part of any flood mitigation, flood prevention program. We have conducted a substantial amount of research looking up and down the California coast and discovered there are many, many situations between Crescent City and San Diego County where sandbars on the beach are manipulated at various times of the year. Unfortunately, the only thing they have in common is that there is some sort of flooding issue, whether it's agricultural land or residential or commercial structures. The specific details that are important to permitting turn out to be quite different among each of the areas that we've looked at, each of the various lagoons. And we've seen projects that are being conducted without permits, much to the consternation of agencies, which is probably going to cause a reaction in the next couple of years in a negative way. We've seen projects that have been fully permitted with EIRs and then ended up in state and federal court over various issues. So it's a bit of a tricky area to be treading. We do know that currently the sandbar is open, the creek's flowing to the ocean. There are at least two places in the sandbar that have not built up over the summertime, which is a little bit unusual, frankly, for this part of California. But in any event, we look looking down the road, we need to be able to understand much better how the sandbar and the lagoon, the tides and storm waves all interact to create or reduce flooding. To that end, we've, as we were researching projects and talking to other agencies, we're also looking for technical experts in this area and have found a company called Philip Williams and Associates, which for the last couple of decades has actually made a niche business out of working almost exclusively in these kind of environments. They alone among the several companies that do this work seem to have the best understanding of the interaction between the biological processes and the geologic processes that go along on the sandbar. So we're recommending with this action today that we contract with them to develop what we're calling the interim sandbar management program. We called it interim because there are a couple steps where we're going to go somewhat light on the technical research in order to get a program in place. So we have the bits and pieces that we would need this year if an emergency develops, and then follow up through the winter with firming up the technical information and the details of it so that we can use a program and a set of plans in the future should we decide to go ahead with a longer-term program.
Thanks, Mark. Thank you, Mark. The last item that we're recommending as the fourth item is calling a pump and pipeline for Meadow Creek Lagoon. And this project will basically be a rental of a large pump, approximately 22,000 gallons per minute pump, and it would be placed in the right of way. At this point, we're anticipating it would be the location would be on Juanita Avenue, right adjacent to Meadow Creek, and the pump would have a suction from from Meadow Lagoon, would have a suction in Meadow Lagoon that would draw the water in, and we would run a pipe up the street, up Juanita Street, across Strand Way and have an outflow onto the beach. We're still working with some street crossings, some street interferences. We have some ideas of we might trench through the street and put the pipe lower in the street so we just have a bump in the middle rather than the pipe sticking up, but we're still working out some of those details with crossings. And it's fairly simple, actually, to implement. This would be a short-term project that we would do. We have quotes. We have a process that we know we can get this. The pump is available. The size of the pump we're looking at, there's only six in the United States, I believe, and there's two or three available right now in Bakersfield that we would have access to one. One of the elements of this that we're still not certain about is the depth of the water in the lagoon. Jill Ogren, who is here as our project manager, advised me this morning that based on a bathymetric survey that we've done, The lagoon depth is approximately 5 feet of water right now at Pier Avenue and approximately 4 feet a little bit farther south at Sandpiper Avenue in that vicinity. So we don't have a lot of depth to work with at this point, and that's going to be a significant condition to be able to draw that kind of water into a pump suction. But this will provide the benefits of this project. It will be able to provide us with reducing the water level in Meadow Creek Lagoon significantly in advance of any major stormwater that we might have. We noticed last year that we did have water creeping up for quite a period of time, several weeks actually, and the type of pump that we're anticipating can basically draw water down approximately 4 feet in about 2 days if we need to. So it would provide advanced sort of reservoir capacity, if you will, in the Meadow Creek area, lowering the flood level, and it would potentially help us during a storm, not a very significant storm, but during a relatively reasonably moderate storm, I guess is subjectively described, to keep that water level down and dispose of that water before it filled up the Aloha Court area. There are other efforts that we are working on. They include, they're summarized here basically, but categorically they're culvert and flap gate cleaning and repairs. We've cleaned the flap gates along the channel to make sure they're not blocked or stuck open. We repaired the actual flap gate under the levee between Meadow Lagoon and Arroyo Grande Creek. We had a little bit of an arm that was twisted on that. We fixed that so that that would operate very freely. And we are replacing the damaged flap gates on the Los Barros culverts that we had. Some type of either a beaver or a muskrat has been eating on that. Initially, we thought it was some vandalism, and I was told last week that actually the 3 foot tall portion of this rubber flat gate has been eaten all the way up now. So,
by a muskrat.
Muskrat, I believe. Mark thinks it's a beaver. So,
not a vandal though.
No, we don't believe it's a vandal.
Well, I mean that's indigestion big time.
That I would think so. Yes. Other efforts that we are continuing also with, I'll get back to the top two in a moment, but on our public education program, one of the elements is we propose to meet with the community between now and December and give them an update. I will be going to the Oceano Community Services District Board meeting tomorrow night and giving a presentation of results of this meeting today, of what our plans are. And the emergency response plan is being updated to increase our cooperation and communication with the supporting agencies that we have, as well as the emergency plan update will incorporate a potential for doing manual breaching of the south levee. And we would anticipate doing that if we had a threat to the north levee and we needed to just cut the channel open on the south side to relieve that pressure so it didn't flood the north area. So that's going to be incorporated in our emergency response plan. It's underway right now and being revised. Mark's going to make a couple comments about the top two items.
Yeah, I should point out to the board, we have been working closely with Fishing Game and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on the issue of beaver dams and their impacts. Turns out, although the species is regulated by the Department of Fish and Game, they're a little bit of a loss as to what kind of a permits a person needs to manipulate a beaver dam. So they've been allowing us to go in and lower water levels as necessary to make sure that flap gates are clear and other work can go on. I should point out that the waterway management plan for Arroyo Grande Creek, which was recently approved by your board and is at Coastal Commission and other agencies for permitting, does include a whole program to deal with beavers or muskrats. I guess Dean and I have agreed to call them aquatic, large aquatic rodents, whatever they are, that are causing some flood issues there. We continue to look at various ditches and culvert cleaning throughout the community of Oceano. It's almost a step-by-step program to get into each one. They have different jurisdictional requirements, different species requirements, but the crews have been busy, and we've had good success with that program so far, and we anticipate several more small projects to keep ditches and culverts open through the winter.
And I just might add that the last two slides that I mentioned, the culvert cleaning, repair, rehab, and these efforts are under our current funded budget for maintenance for Zone 101A. I'm going to ask Mark to address the next slide, which is the status of environmental permits for the seven alternatives or the seven work efforts that we're talking about this morning.
This slide is pulled out of your staff report as attachment 2 and shortened up some of the agency descriptions to just the acronyms. I apologize to the people in the audience for those. Generally, those with X's are the permits or authorizations that are required for the seven projects on the left side. And across the top, those are the various processes. Most of them have a different agency associated with them. Those that are marked green have been completed, although I'll clarify on the north and south levees, we cleared everything for the north, and we're about to get the paperwork for the south. Those are typically routine maintenance projects, but they are inside the coastal zone, which takes just a little bit of extra documentation. We've had very good cooperation from all of the agencies that are listed up there. A couple of the federal agencies have sent representatives out in response to the information we submitted to them to tour the area and familiarize themselves with the situation that we're facing. Your board in September instructed us to prepare and distribute a notice of preparation for an EIR. We don't have a defined project yet, but we were able to describe the situation and the relationships between the lagoons and the creek and species. We did that as a way to provide some kind of formal information and notice to the various agencies, and we've had a good response to that and, again, a couple of site visits, which is encouraging. You notice across the bottom for sandbar management and pump and pipeline, we have not secured any permits for those projects. We anticipate that it would be a 2 to 3 year process at the least to receive any permits. However, by notifying all of the agencies, we've also discussed with each one the appropriate processes necessary to do those projects under emergency authorizations if it comes down to that. There's a couple of rough spots. We still have some meetings to go. It's a little bit of a, very non-routine for a couple of the agencies to be involved in these kinds of actions. So they're looking back at their regulations and statutes and trying to figure out how to best approach it from their side of the fence. But we're hopeful we can work those things out. Well, I guess I did should say Dean listed several projects that are not on here, maybe smaller ones. Several of those did require authorizations from our planning department, from the environmental coordinator's office. We had good response from them. Also been working closely with the General Services Agency, with parks and the airport to get things on the ground in rapid order, and have been pleased with the response that we've gotten there. Should also mention we've met with state parks representatives because, as you know, the sandbar and the lagoon, major parts of those are inside the park and have good cooperation and communication with that agency as well.
Thanks, Mark. The summary represents about 16 projects that we're working on in different pieces and sorts, from large to small. The budget picture that we want to discuss, and we're bringing a recommendation to the board, and this is from your staff report, lists the unfunded projects being the north and south levee raise, the berm on the private property and the wrap property, the sandbar management, the actual work of preparation and the consultant work. Also includes some water quality investigation and testing that we anticipate will be required as part of that sandbar effort. And then the largest component is the pump and the pipeline, which is the large pump pipeline on Juanita Avenue, as well as the staff indirect costs. And that's your total of the $785,000. That really concludes the recommendation summary for the budget adjustment and for the approval of the sole source professional contact. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Dean. Questions from board members before we go to the public? Mr. Teixeira.
Thank you, Chairman Hill. Mr. Benedict or Mr. Hutchinson, my concern lies with the lack of water depth in the lagoon. If it's only 4 or 5 feet, with the amount of water that goes through there, it makes it even more critical that we pump it or keep it down to avoid flooding. I would think that we'd want to start pumping sooner.
Yes. With the information we just received regarding the depth, it's likely that we would need to pump sort of incrementally periods of time. We don't anticipate we would pump probably lower than the level of the flapgate invert or the bottom of the pipeline, but that would probably be our baseline with respect to what environmental constraints we might be addressing or concerns we would have, and we'd be work with Mark on that to determine what that level would be. But as we were just looking at elevations of water, and the basin is not very large, you're correct. And we do have a one-foot elevation difference in just stagnant conditions at Pier Avenue and at the culvert, the flapgate culverts. There's a foot of water difference just for that water to percolate through that area because of what we believe is a berm or an obstruction, if you will, with the reeds in the major part of Meadow Creek area. So I would anticipate that we, as we started doing this, if we did do pumping, we would probably do it portions of a time, likely during the day, because it's a loud pump. It's going to make a lot of noise. If we put that out there, we would probably try to do it for a portion of the day and see how far down we went and see how stable the water was and what the impact was. So it's kind of going to be a trial and error effort of what we do here. But certainly in advance of any large storms to a certain point and during smaller storms to keep the water down so it doesn't get away from us.
Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I assume your research is, I hope your research has revealed that each of the agencies in that matrix have some provision for emergency work ahead of a more formal permitting process. Is that?
Yes, that's correct. There's some interesting interactions, but they do have, well, most have emergency provisions in the statutes that they implement. Others have what they call waiver opportunities.
Okay. And I guess the question is, what's your level of confidence that the concept of an emergency or an urgent situation can be extended to allow the kind of pumping ahead of actual raindrops hitting the surface? Is that the nature of the discussion at this point?
That's really a key element in the efforts to date to contact agencies and provide information about the situation. We would not be contacting them and saying we have water over the road, we have water in a neighborhood. We would be acting in advance of the emergency. State law, CEQA, the Fish and Game Code, generally provide for that. There's actually a phrase in CEQA that we use called specific actions to prevent an emergency. So that's written into the codes. We've just gotten an emergency permit, Clean Water Act, from the Army Corps of Engineers in that same mode to make some repairs to a flapgate in order to prevent an emergency because we're able to document how that emergency is going to develop and that there really are no other options. But it is it's a bit different. I mean, the agencies are used to faxes, phone calls, emails in the midst of a rainstorm, and pictures of a bridge washed out or something, and we're not going to wait until we have that condition.
Can you are you at a point of being able to describe the situation under which, for instance, you would start, you know, that the start pumping, for instance, or seek to manipulate the sandbar? Can you outline that so that the agencies are well known? I mean, this much rain predicted, this high a lagoon level, this much rain in the last X days? Is that?
Well, our task, our internal task over the next, 2 weeks, because that's as far out as the dry predictions have gone, is to actually prepare the documents that we would be sending out in the event of emergency. The maps, the water levels, the last little piece of information, although not critical to me because Dean's crew's already provided things like elevation maps. So we can show the agencies exactly on a photograph and on a map the elevation of the flapgate, the elevation of the streets, the elevation of each of the houses that flooded, and even make some predictions about the volume of water that would fall over a certain area. So we're putting all that together. The key, of course, is going to have all that information, then in front of it have the one-page summary that makes the case exactly why we need some response in the 24-hour range.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. With that, I'll go to the public. And, Annette, if you could set the timer to our usual 3 minutes. Jeff Edwards, please, followed by Joe Shacker. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jeff Edwards, and I'm a frequent commenter on flooding in Oceano. Well, it's been about 10 months now since the last major event, and where are we? There's been a town hall meeting in April, four or five meetings here with your board, and I'm really not sure where we are. What I do know is that there's a culture embedded in public works of hiring consultants. That's what they do, and they do it very well. In the instant case, we've got Canon, we've got Waterways Management, Inc., we've got a biological consultant that's pending selection. We've got the consultant you're hearing about today, Philip Williams, and most of these are sole sourced, by the way. We also have Reynolds, Smith, and Hills. I don't know if you remember them about a month ago. General Services asked you to hire them, and you did. And then, of course, there's public works staff. They get paid win, lose, or draw. We've heard again today and repeatedly the lion's share of the discussion, the money spent and the actions by public works is regarding Arroyo Grande Creek Channel. Arroyo Grande Creek Channel is part of a waterway management plan, has its own EIR, has its own funding mechanism, but we're still talking about it like it doesn't have those things, and I'm curious why. The focus should be on Meadow Creek. And we've heard about the interim sandbar management. Well, I didn't hear anything about the tidewater goby or the steelhead, which are both endangered species, and you're not getting past those. I can guarantee you that. We've heard about a rented pump and a pipeline. And so I understand this. We're gonna pump down the lagoon in a rented pump. We're going to pipe it to the ocean. But I didn't hear anything about a surface water discharge permit. That's an NPDES permit, which probably would not be allowed in this case. So what I learned is that to counter that, they're going to theoretically build about a two-acre pit on the beach for this water to perk into. That's not going to happen either. I'm sorry. So both of those ideas are dead on arrival, truly. General Services, you've heard about their cooperation with the airport. And all I can tell you is that they're planning to pave two more acres to widen runways and taxiways without any provisions for drainage or stormwater runoff. I challenge Supervisor Teixeira to provide leadership with regard to this situation and the misguided actions of Public Works. They have Band-Aid strategies. That's about it. And I'll close by introducing a notion of inverse condemnation. Perhaps your board knows about it. County Council certainly can outline it further. Inverse condemnation is the taking of private property for a public purpose without compensation. And I would suggest or submit to your board that the island and the sanitation district, you're taking those properties for as a drainage basin in effect, and you're not compensating those folks. So I'll close and have a nice lunch.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Mr. Shacker, followed by Steve Ayens. I'm sorry if I pronounced that wrong. Mr. Shacker.
Thank you, gentlemen. At first glance at this, we're going to try to transfer $785,000. I said, yes, finally some action here. But after reading through it, after listening to you all, after listening to Jeff, I don't think that's going to happen. I think we're going to have more studies, more consultants, more wasted money. If it weren't for the seriousness of this issue and the health and welfare of the residents and property at risk, this bureaucratic mess which you're a part of is quite laughable. Just a couple of comments. We were told in September that a letter would be written to the various agencies seeking their cooperation. Has that letter been generated? Has that been put out? And I'm skipping around, but I just want to let you know we've never had problems of flooding in the island, never since 1986. It's rained very hard, and we've never had it flooded until December. What do you think caused that? I can tell you from a point of view that I have, things are overgrown. Maintenance isn't being done. Maintenance used to be done by state parks. State parks says we don't want to disturb Mother Nature. They trim trees. They rake leaves. We've got lives at stake. And I want to bring your attention to Cal Coast, Cal News. General Manager of Oceano Community says everything looks pretty good after the rain we had. A quarter of an inch of rain versus 7 inches that we had in December. Everything looks good. Mr. Benedict says the overriding concern is that we are trying to protect life and property. Doesn't appear to me that way. I went to the 1-1A meeting, and the state parks representative there says, now he's not saying that we don't want to disturb Mother Nature. Now he's saying it's difficult to work with the agencies involved. And then you expected us as a community to deal with the same agencies? We're told that we have to suffer a little more by the 1-1A people. And they weren't aware that us in the island also pay the special assessment to the Rio Grande Creek. We've been paying that since they have. And they weren't aware of that. They thought, well, you have to suffer as we did and spend the last 10 years getting minimal work done on the creek. There's so much to say here. There's so much to comment about in this. There's so much to say about this. There's so much to say. And in 3 minutes, look what's happened again. Go down and look at our neighborhood. The water can't flow in it. It's not a matter of draining the lagoon. The water can't flow from the island into the lagoon. It is all stopped up. The ditches haven't been cleared. Go down there now, right in front of the sanitation district. They haven't been cleared. Even if they were cleared, the water can't get into the lagoon. All of you should go down there and look at that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shacker. Mr. Ayens, followed by Shelley Hamilton, please.
Hi, Stephen Ayens. I live at the corner of the island, right at the corner of Rio Grande Creek and Meadow Creek. And nothing's changed. Actually, I'm kind of nervous now because you guys have cleared vegetation upstream of us. And you guys, we still have no place to go. We're still corked up over there. We still have reeds in front of the flapgates. We still have an unbreachable sandbar. We still have obstructions upstream from aquatic rodents. Nothing's been changed. The water will actually get to my neighborhood faster now. And you guys are running out of time. Historically speaking, the past 2 flooding seasons have happened 30 days within Christmas. The one before last was the 18th of January. And, of course, you remember the last one was December 18th. How weird. And time before that, 2 years before that as well. It all happens at the same time. You guys don't have 8 weeks. You guys don't have 2 months. You have roughly 4 weeks to clear out the bottleneck. You need to uncork Oceano right at the source. I mean, it's common sense. All of the neighborhood drains into the ocean, and you have done nothing to drain my neighborhood. You've cleared upstream. You made the berms higher. Oh, my Lord, you know what's going to happen when all that water comes to my neighborhood? You guys haven't got anything out. It's got to go into the ocean. It's got to go the way it was designed. A foot difference between the length of my street from Lakeside to Security Court where I live, there's a foot difference of static water, boys and girls. Static water means that's without rain. That's without any other influence. There's 12 inches of water that's not draining, and it should run away. It should go out. This isn't rocket science. We're not asking to take and move the whole environment to another planet. Scoot it out of the way. Make a place for the water to go. I could take you to one spot right now. You could look upstream from, look south from the flapgates, and you say, oh my God, how does anything get through there? You can't walk through there. You can't crawl through there. You can't swim through there. The rats can barely get through there. It's all solid, choked with reeds. If you Google it and look down on it and zoom in at the flapgates, you go, oh my God, no wonder. The whole county, the whole Grover City and Oceano drains into that and then comes down. Rio Grande Creek handles everybody else. I don't have like a hydrological study. I've just lived here all my life. I've seen it done. Good old Guyton used to clear it out just in the middle of the night. There'd be a little notch cut in the berm. It would drain. It would run out. Nobody would flood. The sandbar would be put back and everything would be back to Disneyland again with Mother Nature doing its stuff. But you guys, you're running out of time. I'm running out of time. You need to clear this little bottleneck at my neighborhood. Come down and see it when it rains. I'll invite you all over.
Thank you, Mr. Ayens.
You're welcome. Thank you, guys.
Ms. Hamilton, followed by Tom Geeslin, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, board members. I'm a property owner in Zone 1A, and I reside down in the what's referred to as the island area. So I have concerns in both areas, and like you, it's difficult to separate them. the floodgates and the way they are designed alone makes it difficult to separate the two lagoons. I understand that. My first point would be that the large aquatic rodents that are mentioned but not really addressed truly are a problem. I surveyed the area. I do walk my dogs there most days, but from the flap gates to the 22nd Street Bridge, there are a minimum of 9 large aquatic rodent dams. And on occasions when my dog might pull a log or something out of one, we have water that flows down to the ocean, as it should, through the L position in the Oceano Lagoon, allowing for the habitat of tidewater goby and allowing for the steelhead trout to go as far as they can before there is no longer any water or before they reach a beaver dam, which all comes back, in my mind, to the topography of the Meadow Creek Lagoon. There is a non-existent drain into it right now. If you are to walk past the ranger station, you'll see that the Oceano Lagoon is big and broad, and on the other side of the bridge going into the county campground, where Meadow Creek should be draining, it's completely dry. And so what Mr. Eanes was saying about it being a stagnant water is absolutely true. All that water that is in there now has been in there since the last rainy season because there's no contribution to it right now. So I would address personally upper Meadow Creek regions as well. And I know it's difficult. I've worked with agencies. I understand permitting processes, and I understand endangered species necessities as well. But to come back to the Arroyo Grande Creek sandbar management technical plan, there was a comment made on light on technical research, and I can only assume that that would be the topography and bathymetry of the Arroyo Grande Lagoon, which changes on a daily basis, unfortunately, and it comes back to the large aquatic rodents being the cause of that. So while all of this is huge and there are so many agencies involved, as often happens with Mother Nature, there's often a tiny little thing that could just be somehow addressed and perhaps changed or moved to a higher watershed location and alleviate the flooding in both of the areas that I live and love in. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hamilton. Appreciate that. Mr. Geislin.
Good morning, Chairman Hill and the rest of the board. I'm here today speaking on the fact that this money that's put before you has been well thought out and planned. When I got involved with the Oceano Community Service District, even though flood control is not exactly in the charter, the health and welfare of my ratepayers are in my charter. And I am deeply concerned about them going through another Christmas or New Year's, having to put up rafts and get the water pumped out of their buildings. This project in the last 90 days has had a tremendous amount of interagency communication. And we have been hearing from state parks, the county, everybody for the first time in a long time, I think, is exercising a beautiful stream of open communication where all the problems are put on the table and being addressed in the way that they should be. I can't speak to the flooding before, other than that when I go back through all the data, I can see where a lot of it was where this hand didn't know what this hand was doing, and by the time they did, and the amount of water that came through, it created a lot of problems. Some of the speakers before are absolutely right. If you look at the way Arroyo Grande Creek runs, that maybe not be the problem, and then Meadow Creek is the problem. But Meadow Creek is covered by two or three different agencies, where Arroyo Grande Creek is covered by a different agency. And so trying to get this handshake and get this communication is going forward in place, and I believe that your county staff is executing to the best of their ability. I put my agency up to that we would do the monitoring. I have guys that are on the first guys on the ground every day, and we've got an agreement from state parks and the county to be the ones reporting. The gentleman who misquoted me there, that after an inch and a half of rain, I said that the water was flowing because I had my guys on the ground checking all the hot spots to make sure everything was there. I don't want you to discard this. You owe this to the people of Oceano. Yes, it's a lot of money, but unfortunately with the past laws and regulatory agencies that want to tell everybody what to do and that you can't move this willow for this species, that's the medicine that we have to swallow now. But we need to spend this money for the good of the people of Oceano and the good of the people of South County, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Gieselin. That will close it to the public. We'll bring it back to the board, and wanted to know if staff had any follow-up comments that they wanted to make, if so, or not.
I'd just like to make a note again to reinforce that the reason that we're focusing primarily or initially or so hard on Arroyo Grande Creek area particularly is because that does have the greatest potential of having a breach and flooding a lot of people and providing a lot of damage and potentially a risk to people's life, and that's our primary focus. The rest of these items, and we're trying to balance money out, but that's a focus that we have to start with, and then the rest of these things we're trying to bring together as best we can. Mark, you want to mention anything about the letter to the resource agencies?
Oh, yes. Just to clarify, at your last meeting, you asked the chairman to send letters out to resource agencies, and 7 letters have been sent.
Okay. Mr. Meacham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Contrary to a lot of what I've heard today about criticism about doing nothing, I mean, this is the first time I've seen a significant effort put forward with money behind it to do something. So even though it may not meet everybody's needs and it may not, I guess, accomplish everything that needs to be done, I think that for the first time we're moving in some pretty monumental steps to get it done. Is it the end all? No. But I think it's a huge step forward. And as Mr. Gieselin said, I do believe that we do owe this to the community of Oceano to take care of this. And so I'm going to support this. I think that we asked prior, in the prior meetings, we're tired of talking about a lot of this. Let's move.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've got money to do something, so we're moving. So there you are.
Yeah, I would second those sentiments. That's exactly as we've had updates. We've continued to push this entire board to bring back, and it's more difficult, obviously, than we would like it to be, and certainly the residents would like it to be. But we have pushed on Public Works to bring us actual actions and funding for those actions so that we can do the best that we can for our community in Oceano, which all of us, other not just Supervisor Teixeira, but all of us care about. And I think that this is a good step in that direction. Mr. Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree as well, although I can certainly understand the frustration of residents who look out across Meadow Lagoon and see how it was done in the past. And it's cold comfort to understand that there's overlapping agency jurisdictions and not everybody's on board with an immediate fix to the problem. I think our staff has set this up as best as can be for emergency work to occur, and I would point out that within the $700,000+, nearly half of it is devoted directly to pumping out Meadow Creek Lagoon to the ocean. And despite the comments of one of our frequent commenters, that is a direct action item that will take place if it's necessary. I think it was Mr. Schechter did reference, however, the question of ditches and other drainages within the neighborhoods. His concern being that there was some impediment to water draining into Meadow Creek Lagoon, and I was wondering if Public Works staff could comment about any efforts and make sure we understand whose responsibility those are to keep in the best shape they can be.
Well, Mark's going to have to help me a little bit with this, but the culverts that are accessible and are maintenance and are environmentally maintainable, if that's even a concept, we have cleaned out and will continue to do. There is not a lot of slope to get the water from the streets into a ditch or a culvert that's lower than the street and drained by gravity to the Meadow Lagoon. There's just not a lot of slope. We're talking about 3 feet of difference from the lowest house elevation to the invert of the Flapgate culvert that goes under Rio Grande Creek. So anything in there has to take a long, circuitous path to get into that water level. There's just not a lot of
pressure from water to be able to build up and move down there. That's why the culverts get filled up. And the ditches are even more problematic because they accumulate mud, silt, and Mark has been trying to get permits to clean the ditches that do convey that water, but it's extremely difficult because the ditches end up being riparian areas, and that's all I...
They're not on a maintenance plan at this point, then.
Right. We don't have any kind of standing permits, what they call MOUs or programmatic permits for our routine maintenance stuff, although that being said, there is work that can be done sort of under the umbrella of ongoing maintenance or routine maintenance. We struggle with this throughout the county in various areas, and it depends on who's looking at the ditch and what time of the year. We do tend to push, how shall I say this? We tend to do some of the work late in the season because for biological issues, there's less potential for violating some critical federal laws, shall I say. So we do this week, last week, and next week and ongoing have people on the ground with our crews applying some of the techniques that we've found in the past to be helpful in, how shall I say, getting the job done and not aggravating agencies to the point where they feel it's worth taking
the most
negative
liberal
actions.
Interpretation of our authority, which I understand. Does Public Works understand the neighborhood drainage system well enough to know whether there are specific hot spots, or I guess they would be wet spots, where some smaller scale pumping simply to convey water out of the neighborhood might be appropriate? We do that in Los Osos, we do that in Cambria at a level. Is that something you can consider?
From a biological perspective, or just looking at what's out there, one of the problems we have is that our roadside channels and ditches, even the larger ones along Aloha in particular, flow out into the lagoon. And for lack of a better description, our equipment can only reach so far down the ditch. Beyond that ditch, the reeds, the bulrushes, have grown so thick that even though we clear the ditch, the water just barely moves through those areas that, A, are no longer in our ditch, no longer our property, and B, are out of reach of some of our equipment. So in at least one instance, we've gone in with hand crews to try to do some clearing, but it is a monumental task in some of those spots.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. There's no further questions. I'll go to Mr. Teixeira.
Thank you, Chairman Hill. I appreciate the comments and support of my colleagues, and I will address a couple of comments made by the public. We started this project. I got the phone call on this the day that it flooded down there, and not having taken a position on the board, immediately called Mr. Meacham, who at that time was the chairman, and graciously got action going. Met with Public Works at that time, and shortly after I took office, we had a meeting in Oceano. We've continued to meet in Oceano, been there every week, had numerous meetings with Public Works in these projects, and I can tell you that as an ongoing project, it is very difficult to deal, having come from the private sector, where you can't go in there and just do it. There's certain criteria you have to do. There's certain policies you have to follow. There's certain T's you've got to cross and I's you've got to dot. So I can tell you from my experience that Public Works is doing what they can do. They've got a can-do attitude. We're going to get it done. It may take longer than most people expect, but the progress and the parts are in place, and we will continue to look forward and work with the agencies that are our partners and will be our partners and go forward from them. If there's no further questions from the board or the public, I would suggest the motion to approve.
Second.
Okay. And that motion is to waive the adopted contract and services, et cetera, and authorize the money transfers for the flood control. So with that, roll call, please, Madam Clerk. And it's Supervisor Teixeira, seconded by Supervisor Meacham.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
And just I think one of the greatest impediments to getting any of this done is we have to deal with 11 agencies. If we get rid of about 8 of them, we get something done. Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
And Mr. Hill?
Yes. Thank you. Okay. We are now moving towards and I'm usually looking for hats. And I don't see them yet, the cowboy hats. We're usually waiting for our cattlemen to write in. But as we do that, Mr. Jensen, when we go to closed session, how much time are we going to need?
About 45 minutes.
Is there any way we can cut that down? Because we're going to have to, essentially, we're going to have to come back after the afternoon hearing.
Well, we have five items to discuss. We could do bits and pieces if you want.
Well, I don't think we're going to have enough time, though. I do hope the cattlemen do arrive, as they are scheduled to be here now. I see one cowboy hat. Just to tell people who are at home and also our carriers at KCBX, when we adjourn this afternoon after the presentation of the Cattleman of the Year, we will recess until 2:00. Usually we come back at 1:30. Today we'll come back at 2:00, and then we will. I can't imagine that we won't be able to do it. We'll have to do our closed session in the afternoon.
That's fine.
After the hearings.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. So, with that, Madam Clerk, do you want to introduce the do we have an introduction for this? We don't. I don't think so. So,
you can do it, Mr. Chairman.
I see Mr. Kester. I'm going to
turn it over to Steve Johns, our
okay.
President.
All right. That would be if you could please come forward, and I'd be happy to make time for you.
Good morning. Thank you for your time. The San Luis Obispo County Cattlemen's Association is very proud to introduce Dr. Anthony V. Tony Keyes as their 2011 Cattleman of the Year. Tony is a graduate of Duke Medical School in Durham, North Carolina, where he became an orthopedic surgeon. After graduation, he moved to San Luis Obispo and helped start San Luis Medical Clinic. A short time later, he purchased some registered Angus cattle, bought a ranch in Pozo, and established the K-Bar 6 Angus Ranch. Tony was the beef leader for Bishop Peak 4-H Club for 30-some years. He has supported the youth of this area for over 40 years, helping children that couldn't afford to get steers or replacement heifers and then buying them back. Every year, as sure as the fair comes, Tony is always at ringside, watching the beef shows, and then come sale day, he is there buying animals at both the replacement heifer sale and the junior livestock auction. For the past 50 years, he has been a member of the San Luis Obispo County Cattlemen's Association, the California Cattlemen's, and the National Cattlemen's, the American Angus Association, and the Western Angus Association, Caballeros de San Luis Obispo, the American Medical Association, and served as president of both the Caballeros and the American Medical Association's San Luis Obispo County chapter. Tony has always been on the cutting edge, striving to improve his herd of Angus cattle by using some of the top bulls in the nation through artificial insemination, as well as attending seminars, workshops, and cattle shows throughout California. The K-Bar 6 brand is seen on herd bulls all over the Tri-County area, where ranchers are looking for ways to improve their calf crop production. Year in and year out, his bulls perform in the top of the test at the Cal Poly Bull Test Center. He has won numerous awards throughout the state with his cattle. Some of the K-Bar 6 cows rank highest in production records with the Angus Association. Besides being an avid team penner and fisherman, he has always made time to help lots of people in need in our community, and has donated countless hours of time to the Achievement House program. Tony and his wife Liz have four sons, Larry, Jack, Bill, and Jim Keyes, who all went through the 4-H program, and now their children are in 4-H or have just completed the program. Acknowledging his many accomplishments, dedication, and commitment to the ever-changing industry, and his numerous contributions to the community, it is easy to understand why his peers chose Tony Keyes to be their 2011 Cattleman of the Year. Congratulations to Tony, and thank you for all your hard work and support to the beef industry, the area youth, and the medical profession for over 50 years.
Dr. Keyes, could we get you to say a few words? I know you're saying, wait a minute, I just stood. We would be happy to hear from you, sir.
Well, thank you for the recommendation, and I really don't have anything to say because you've said it all.
Was it accurate?
Of course it's accurate. What else do I know? But this is a program that I had never thought of doing or being involved in. So anyway, I appreciate your attention and keep the cattle going. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Meacham?
And Tony, I wanted to convey the congratulations and thanks from my legislative assistant that was in your 4-H, Vicki Shelby, Vicki Meinhold.
There she comes.
Wanted to convey our congratulations to you.
Okay. There she is. Okay, so we will then, I guess we shall adjourn for our luncheon with our friends in the Cattlemen Association, and we will be back at we'll recess until 2 o'clock, have our afternoon hearing, and then we'll do closed session after that. So thank you all, and we'll see you soon. Back from a cattleman's luncheon that's a tradition at the Board of Supervisors, and only to find out that our AGP video is not working at the moment. So what we're going to do, because we haven't done it yet, is we're going to do our closed session, which is going to be approximately how long, Mr.?
45 minutes.
Because we don't want to hear, and I know, sorry that everybody who's here on time, which is all of you here, we're going to go to our conference room for 45 minutes for closed session, and then hopefully all of the technical difficulties will be worked out so that the hearing will be able to be held and televised as people would properly like it to be. So we do apologize for that. We will be back in 45 minutes. And I'm sorry, I forgot to open it for public comment. If there's any, I have no request to speak on open session. If there's anyone that wants to speak on open session, please come forward. And so we will see you at 2:45. Thank you. Mr. Ogren, I see you there with Ms. Howard. Would you like
yes.
to kick it off?
Chairman Hill, members of the board, and public, I am Pablo Ogren, Public Works Director, and with me today is Courtney Howard, our senior engineer who leads our regional water resource planning and policy development work efforts. Before I get started, we did get some correspondence from a Paul Betker, which has 11 signatures in opposition to the proposed project by NCSD, and I'm just submitting that to the clerk for the record. Today I am providing staff comments because the recommended action is about interagency relations and a proposed assessment district. Courtney is also here because the staff report includes some significant history on water resources on the Napomo Mesa. She has worked with the Planning Department, County Council, and the Napomo Community Services District on the staff report. She is also our representative who attends the Napomo Mesa Management Area meetings and the Northern Cities Management Area meetings, which were both created as an outcome of the Santa Maria Groundwater Basin litigation. Lastly, she is our lead on the Integrated Regional Water Management Plan and recently led the grant efforts, which resulted in a $10.4 million grant award from the Department of Water Resources. That grant includes just over $2 million for the Napomo project, just over $2 million for the flood control waterway management plan in Arroyo Grande Creek, and it includes about $5.5 million for the Los Osos wastewater project. And in my concluding remarks, I'll get back to that. In any case, Courtney will be best suited to answer some of the questions that might arise. Napomo CSD representatives are also in attendance, as well as the City of Santa Maria, the City of Arroyo Grande, and Golden State Water Company, and they may be able to also help attend to some of the questions from your board. The Northern Cities Management Area is essentially Zone 3 of the Flood Control District, and some of those city councils and elected bodies have also submitted letters, which are included in the staff report. Nevertheless, today's question for your board is more limited than the bigger question of water resources on the Napomo Basin, and it's more focused than the pros and cons of the project that Napomo has been working on. The question at hand is whether NCSD should be allowed to form an assessment district and to proceed to a vote of property owners on whereby the property owners would either approve assessments or deny assessments for the proposed project. Indeed, in 2010, about this time last year, your board approved such an agreement with NCSD where the county would lead in the formation of the assessment district and conduct the property owner vote. Today is responding to the current NCSD request that they go independently on the formation of the assessment district and the property owner vote. Two things have happened in the past year. First, alternative proceedings have been identified by bond counsel, and those alternative proceedings are what is the draft resolution in your board package, which would allow NCSD to go independently. And secondly, the financial advisor on the project has basically ruled that it's their opinion that these alternative procedures are more favorable for pursuing financing on the project. But again, ultimately, it's a vote of the property owners in accordance with Prop 218 and the state constitution as to whether or not those assessments will ultimately be approved or not. So whether the county proceeds under the 2010 agreement, which would again have your board forming the assessment district and conducting the vote, or whether NCSD's current request is supported and go independently, your board's consideration is needed because some of the property owners are outside of NCSD boundaries are in the unincorporated areas of the county. For example, some of them are within the boundaries of the Golden State Water Company. In other words, some of the benefits of the proposed projects are identified to benefit property owners that are outside NCSD's boundaries. And so the assessment district being outside of NCSD boundaries would require your board to either act in accordance with the 2010 agreement that was adopted or act underneath these alternative proceedings. Today's recommended action, if approved by your board, will have staff work with county council to ensure final legal review and, in particular, CEQA findings, the California Environmental Quality Act. We do anticipate some CEQA findings would be needed by your board. Napomo CSD has already certified the EIR, and the development of the CEQA findings for your board would be based on the issue of the assessment district and the board's discretionary action allowing them to proceed to a vote of the property owners. Obviously, Council McNulty has been, we were on the phone with bond counsel, and Council McNulty would be helping us with those final legal reviews. My two final comments are back to the Integrated Regional Water Management Grant. This project is one of a suite of projects that was approved. If any of those three projects does not go forward to completion, it could jeopardize grant funding for the other two projects. And so Courtney and her team are currently evaluating the overall points and what we were awarded from DWR in order to address whether or not there's any issues of risk there. Obviously, the Los Osos wastewater project itself garnered, you know, the biggest points in terms of us being able to compete on a statewide basis for those grant monies. But anyway, that's a sort of an indirect relationship to the action of your board today, but nevertheless, it does have or could potentially have impacts on the integrated regional management grants. And lastly, in the staff report, I discussed on assessment districts a couple of items, and I need to clarify one in particular. One is that the creditworthiness of assessment bonds tends to provide lower interest rates, and while that has been historically true, the current market conditions, that's not necessarily true. The fluctuation in land values has had some negative effects on the ability to sell assessment bonds. But on the second point in the staff letter, which is through an assessment vote, you can more equitably allocate costs between developed properties and undeveloped properties. That still remains to be true. So it's a little bit of a minor point, but I still wanted to make sure that I provided that clarification. That concludes staff comments, and we'll be glad to answer any questions, and those that may be more appropriate for NCSD or some of the other agencies to answer will steer their way as well.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Ogren. Questions for Mr. Ogren before we do have, I believe, quite a lot of people from the public, including NCSD elected board members, council, and their general manager, so I know that there's plenty of people to answer questions as they come up, and if there are no direct board questions, we'll go to those. Let's begin with Michael Wynn, and followed by John Snyder. Mr. Wynn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Supervisors, my name is Mike Wynn, and I do serve on the NCSD board as one of their directors. I took the liberty of giving each of you a little handout today. I personally find it irritating when I get things at the last minute, so you can set it aside. It's not part of our presentation today, but I did want you to have it since they're hot off the press just today. I do understand that our purpose today is strictly to talk about who's going to lead in the tax assessment. It's not trying to get your approval for the project, although we've appreciated your unanimous approval over the past years and hope to continue to have that. But I do ask you to support the NCSD leading in this formation for a couple of fairly clear reasons, I think. One, it's very clear that your own staff is stretched hard to do all of the things that you have to do countywide. This is a struggle for our work in the North County. I know you've had the same struggles elsewhere in the county. Not only that, this project is 25 miles away from the center of your operations, which logistically adds expense and difficulty to your efforts to do that. Your staff are very competent. They could certainly lead in this. They could form a tax district for this project, and they would be able to do it. My guess is we can do it faster and we can do it cheaper if we do it locally. And it's because of that that I urge you to support our leadership in it. We do have the 2010 agreement, and as you well know, there's a reimbursement agreement there so that if it costs more for you to do it, we end up turning around and having to pass that along to our ratepayers, so they would pay the increased cost as well, which is perfectly legitimate. We don't ask your staff to work for free, but we think that we can do it more cost-effectively if we do it ourselves. You do have an example, unfortunately, in Las Osas of what happens when a group of activists that are not elected organize opposition. And that's been a 30-year slow-motion train wreck. This is a problem that we face. It's a very serious problem, needing supplemental water. We ask that you help us solve it as quickly as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn. Mr. Snyder, followed by John Seitz.
My name is John Snyder. I sent two letters, one yesterday concerning the Kosh parcel. Golden State Water has admitted that's not within the boundary. There's a proposed map that includes it. I request that you exclude that and other parcels that are not officially on the map. NCSD has proposed that those parcels just opt out, giving up future rights, but that's not quite the same as being outside and not being part of this project and maybe participating in a future project that would actually do something in the future. Secondly, I sent a letter this morning, or for your meeting here. I think that this final resolution, the public is not informed about this. NCSD needs to go back and calculate the exact cost so that people can figure out what this really means to them and then come back and request to have the ability to go outside their boundary. I think this proposal pre-assumes that people are going to have their representation restricted, and many of the entities operate under the PUC. It would basically circumvent PUC approval of this project and the review that occurs with that, and the representation by the ratepayer advocate for the customers, not for the corporation, Golden State Water Company, but for the customers. In particular, I find that some of the stuff that the board staff put in the packet from NCSD was very misleading. Golden State Water customers will pay approximately five times more under this plan at an assessment as opposed to a rate-based approach, because Golden State customers are in Napomo and Orcutt. One is in Napomo, Tenner and Orcutt. 10% of Twitchell costs are paid for by Napomo, 90% by Orcutt, and it's supposed to be reversed. 10% of Napomo water costs for Golden State are paid by Napomo, and 90% by Orcutt. So if all of it's paid in an assessment, basically the Golden State water customers get the shaft. And that shouldn't happen, and NCSD shouldn't be allowed to get outside their boundaries to do that. In Rural Water Company, They basically got shafted because in the settlement, their lawyer was the same as Golden State's lawyer, and they should have the opportunity to go to the PUC and present the evidence to the PUC with the ratepayer advocate that represents them, not the lawyers that represent the corporation, and be able to argue that the percentages in the settlement are unfair and see whether they'll go for that or not, and then potentially come back and come out with either a rate-based approach or an assessment approach individually for them. Yeah. 13 seconds. First of all of the audio has been doubly recorded here, so you can see everything at nonewwhiptax.com, which has all the documents available. And a 3,000-acre-foot water intertype project isn't going to solve a 6,000-acre-foot problem that NCSD's Ed Eby claims that we have. So it's not a solution to saltwater intrusion. It's only a third of a solution or half a solution. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Snyder. And Mr. Seitz, you just wanted to be available for questions. Is that correct? And that would be the same for Mr. Sevcik. Am I saying your name correctly?
That's correct.
Okay, so we have two. Mr. Seitz is the counsel, as you know, to the NCSD. So we might have questions. Is there any questions at this time for Mr. Seitz? Okay, or Mr. Sevcik? Okay, we'll come to you as they may come. So let's go back into those who want to comment. Ken Peterson, followed by Ed Eby, please.
Chairman Hill, members of the board, Ken Peterson, district manager for Golden State Water Company for the Coastal District. The staff report is very balanced, responsive to the situation with the need for the supplemental pipeline and the assessment district. We at Golden State Water Company is a party to this, as you well all know, to the litigation of the groundwater in Santa Maria River. We are in support of Nipomuc Community Services District and their taking the lead on the assessment district. We are interested in getting the capital improvements funded and for the supplemental water. And Golden State Water is all about making the project work at the least cost to our customers, and this we see as moving towards that goal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Mr. Eby, followed by Arlene Versaw, please.
Afternoon. I'm Ed Eby. I'm also a director on the Nipomuc Community Services District Board. Of course, I support the NCSD taking the lead in this in the creation of this assessment district. I think the NCSD can do this creation of the assessment district more efficiently, quicker, and less expensive. I think we can do it more efficiently because we have been working with the assessment engineer for the last 3 years. We're completely up to speed, and we can hit the road running. This should give lower cost to the project and to the residents of the Nipomuc Mesa, since ultimately they will be paying for our creation of this district. It'll be lower cost because it'll be quicker, and in this project, time is money. We are right now facing the lowest construction financing costs in years. And if we take advantage of that as soon as possible, we can capture today's costs as opposed to inflated costs, which ultimately will come in the future. So I urge you to support a resolution to allow the NCSD to create the assessment district. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Eby. Ms. Versaw, followed by Bill Dorland, please.
Good afternoon. Arlene Versaw, a Cypress Ridge resident and a customer of Rural Water. Unfortunately, we learned about this agenda item at the last minute, or there'd be many more of us here to talk to you today. We are members of an organization called Mesa Community Alliance, which is a group of Mesa residents that gathered together to look into and to respond to common interest items and issues. We don't have a city council. We depend on you, and so we are here today because we're trying to ask you to please not rush to judgment in granting NCSD's request. As county supervisors, we know you're committed to making good, solid decisions on the behalf of the county residents that you serve. However, you can only make good decisions if you have all the information necessary to make fully informed decisions. We know that you depend on staff reports to give you the information you need to make your decisions. However, as good as they may be, that's only one perspective. And you will miss out on what some of the public feels about this, as an example. And so what we are asking you to do basically is to delay taking action today so that you can have an opportunity to gather more information that you do not have at your disposal in making this decision right now, so you can make the best possible decision you can on behalf of all the residents that you serve. As you'll hear from the speakers that follow me, we feel the staff report is not entirely complete in terms of the costs, the justification, and the alternatives, and does not include the real possibility of the county losing water management control in the Santa Maria groundwater basin for the next 30 years. So we're here to make you aware of some of the questions surrounding the formation of an assessment district by NCSD before you move forward. We ask why you must rush to judgment on this, and whether that's prudent. And we hope that we have an opportunity to provide you with other detailed pertinent information not contained in your staff report. We can do that given the time to do that, and we ask you therefore to delay consideration of this agenda item until we have the opportunity to do so. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Versoff. Mr. Dorland, followed by Pat Eby.
Bill Dorland, I reside in Cypress Ridge and am a rural water customer. Chairman Hill and members of the board, I believe in representative democracy. I think you do too. But by the transfer of the authority to create an assessment district to the NCSD, I think that's a move in the wrong direction. As you probably know, Rural Water Company is not a public body. We who live in its service territory have no ability to vote for the management of that body. We have no ability to vote for the folks who govern NCSD. The stipulation, which is part of the judgment in the Santa Maria Water case, provides that rural water customers will pay 8.33% of the cost of the water. The issue of who's to construct the pipeline or who's to pay for it is left open. I believe that in deferring to the NCSD, you're allowing the NCSD to decide those very important issues. That is, how much of the cost of the pipeline is to be borne by the customers of rural water who have absolutely no connection with the system of NCSD and would benefit, if at all, only as a user of the same aquifer as NCSD, and therefore we would be in the same position as others who use that aquifer, such as ConocoPhillips and owners of large acres of property. I think that's a very critical issue that needs to be determined by a political body in which we have a representation. So that for that reason, I strongly recommend that you consider this issue further and that you think about whether it leads to public credibility to have NCSD make these decisions rather than the county. We vote for members of the Board of Supervisors, for Supervisor Teixeira. And so, therefore, we believe that our interests are represented at the level of the Board of Supervisors, certainly not at the NCSD. There's no way we can control their decision-making. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Eby, followed by Bill Petrick.
Thank you. I have materials that I've delivered to the board. Shall I put them up here?
You can do that, ma'am. We'll get that up for you. It's turning on right now as you speak. Okay, it's up on the screen. That microphone has a, if you turn it on at the base, So in the back, sort of at the base there. I see someone coming to help you, so you won't... Oh.
Yes, yes, no.
There you go.
Good afternoon, Supervisor Hill and Board of Supervisors. My name is Pat Eby. I'm a member of the Mesa Community Alliance. I live in the Woodlands. As a member of MCA, I am asking you to deny NCSD's request to create an assessment district. If one has to be created, we much prefer having our Board of Supervisors control that monumental project. The costs that NCSD has disclosed have been the most minimal costs that they could possibly disclose. They are talking only to the residents and the other purveyors, customers, about a $24 million or $25 million pipeline. But the costs of this project are much, much higher, and none of this information has been publicly disclosed by NCSD. Through a great deal of research, we have pulled information from NCSD's board packets, and that is what I give to you today. The top lines here are really the purveyor costs, as shown in a report by Wallace Group in 2009. Now, this is annual costs, so this first column has capital costs for 1 year. The second column has operation and maintenance costs, which are Santa Maria's charges, $1.724 million every year for the privilege of taking water out of the aquifer in Santa Maria and piping it up to us. Those totals are on the right-hand column. Underneath, I have totaled those totals and multiplied them by 30 to get a total 30-year cost of $77 million. Now, these prices are 2 years old, so its costs have gone up. They're at least $80 million now. In addition, the water costs are not identified, and the water costs are specified by Santa Maria. I've taken those costs. The costs for the last 2 years have been increased 5%. So I extended that for the 30-year period using 2,000 acre-feet for the first 10, 2,500 the second 10, and so forth. And the total cost of the water over 30 years is likely to be $267 million plus. So we're looking at a total cost of $345, $350 million minimum. Additional costs have been identified by Mr. LeBrun that include costs for capital costs in Santa Maria, and which he estimates will be about another who knows how many million dollars, quite a big chunk of money. I don't want to give a number there because I don't know what it is. He has told that informally to other people that I've talked to. There are additional costs for the operation and maintenance on NCSD's side that he estimates are $100 per acre foot. So in that document, you'll see the acre-foot costs and how they explode over years. Now, NCSD's customers...
Ms. Eby, you're out of time.
Oh, pardon?
You're out of time. I'm sorry.
Oh, I couldn't see the clock because disclosed.
Do you want to sum up real quickly?
I would like to summarize. The costs that NCSD says are their customers' costs are, again, extremely minimized. We estimate they're currently paying $203 bimonthly, or $1,200 a year. We estimate that in 1 year's time after the pipeline is, they would be paying $360 bimonthly, or $2,205 annually, for an increase of 81%. Now, we hear about these undeveloped properties opting in. We need full disclosure of who those undeveloped properties are, where they are, and what they're going to pay, and who owns them, because we have full disclosure on everybody other's customers, but not the undeveloped properties. Please do not support this. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Petrick, followed by John Sonkson.
Yes, I'm Bill Petrick. I'm a registered professional engineer, a business owner in Napomo. I live in Black Lake, and I've studied this for years. And just to summarize, what I'm going to tell you is do not approve giving NCSD this type of power. Although the issue at hand is to approve or disapprove allowing NCSD to create a tax assessment district outside its borders, the underlying thesis is that the WIP, or Waterline Intertie Project, is a necessary project, and that's flawed logic. Much of the staff report repeats arguments promoted by NCSD to support this project. As with most complex issues, there are multiple points of view, and this proposed project is no different. You, as supervisors, need to understand both sides of the arguments in order to make an informed decision. The question to be asked here also, is this project necessary and cost-effective? If so, an assessment district is appropriate. If not, stop now. You don't have to create an assessment district if it's not going to do any good and it's not beneficial to the county residents. First, the supplemental water project, as they call it, is not supplemental water by any definition, any standard definition. They redefined the term supplemental water in the stipulation because the basin was divided into three administrative areas, and they're bringing water from one administrative area to another. There is no new water being added to the basin because of this project, and that's important. Second, the pumping depression and the area to watch, I believe in your board packet in attachment H, are important issues for the Northern Cities area, but there's no analysis that shows that this WIP project protects the seaward gradient along the border region. If the WIP is implemented and another physical solution is needed for these real problems, then the county property owners will be forced to pay for another expensive solution. I think this would be a huge mistake directly attributable to the county allowing NCSD to create an assessment district for a project that may not be in the best interest of the county residents. Our analysis of all the technical reports indicates that this project and its alternatives have not been properly evaluated. If the county were to take over the assessment district responsibility, it should do a thorough review of costs and benefits before even going to the voters. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Petrick. Mr. Songson, followed by Robert Almy, please.
Good afternoon, Chairman and fellow board members. I also am representing the MCA and ask you not to approve this request. The support from other cities such as Pismo and Aurora Grande have no relevance. Of course they support the project. It brings water to the Mesa at no cost to them, and they have to support it because they were signature people on the stipulation. What they do not consider is that any future solutions that are directly beneficial to them and involve the Napomo Mesa management area would be impossible to implement because of the long-term commitments made to finance the pipeline project. Furthermore, the letters from Pismo and AG take statements out of context from the Napomo Mesa Management Area annual reports to support their contention that the Mesa is responsible for their possible, and I underline that word, seawater intrusion event. This type of support demonstrates why the county needs to be involved in the basin-wide effort to control water supply. Dividing the basin into management areas and purview areas makes overall basin management almost impossible. If the county allows NCSD to create this assessment district, everyone on the Mesa will suffer because it will preclude any integrated regional planning as is being promoted by the Water Resource Advisory Committee and the countywide integrated regional water management plan. The Mesa Community Alliance, a loose organization of Mesa residents, has held three town-style meetings to share this information with Mesa residents. Hundreds of affected homeowners have attended. When asked how many support the NCSD proposal, you could count the supporters on one hand. When asked how many would support getting the county and the Board of Supervisors to be involved in a comprehensive study and plan for managing this regional issue with a regional plan, almost all indicated their support. We have collected hundreds of signatures which will be presented to this board asking for your involvement in this matter that affects virtually thousands of water users across this county. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Robert Almy, followed by Frank Freitas, please.
Chairman Hill, members of the board. My name is Robert Almy. I'm providing testimony on behalf of the Northern Cities Management Area, which comprises the cities of Pismo Beach, Arroyo Grande, Grover City, and the Oceano Community Services District. I'm a professional geologist with 34 years' experience in hydrogeology and water management, 18 years as the manager of the Santa Barbara County Water Agency. I've worked on seawater intrusion issues in four California counties and in the state of Massachusetts. I'm going to spend less time giving you my testimony than my qualifications. Briefly, the Nipomo Supplemental Water Project is essential to protecting supplies in southern San Luis Obispo County. The well-documented lowering of water table in the Nipomo area changes the gradient, just thus the flow, to the north and to the west. Lowering or reversing the gradient toward the ocean can eventually cause seawater intrusion. If seawater intrusion occurs, it can take years to reverse. The area depends on groundwater, and therefore seawater intrusion can be a very serious issue. Supplemental supplies represented by the Nipomo project will reduce risk of seawater intrusion. Thank you.
Mr. Almey, a quick question. Have you met the mayor of Grover City?
Not personally, no. I've worked with his staff.
Okay, just a personal suggestion. You should refer to it as Grover Beach.
Absolutely.
A sensitive but rather large, athletically built man. So,
and as such, I can respect why I wouldn't want to meet him in any kind of
just a friendly tip.
Thank you very much, Grover Beach. I correct
there
the record.
There you go. Thank you, sir. Mr. Freitas, followed by Michael LeBrun.
Frank Freitas, a resident of Nipomo, and I support the staff recommendation. The people in the community will have to be convinced to vote for this project, and I hope the correct information is out and they'll be able to make a decision based on that information, but I do support the project going forward so that the community can get the information and either support or oppose it, but at least get the project going. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Freitas. And Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, Chairman Hill, members of the board, members of staff and the audience, good afternoon. My name is Michael LeBrun. I'm the general manager of the Nipomo Community Services District, and as your staff outlined, I'm here to answer questions as needed. I did want to recognize county staff efforts in the development of the staff report, which we feel is well-balanced and has good background on the project. Really, that's all I needed to say at this point, and again, available for any questions your board may have. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. LeBrun. I think we... Okay. No, we don't have a question just yet. So we're going to... That's all the requests I have to speak from the public, so we're going to bring it back to the board and have some board discussion. Mr. Patterson, and as I said before, members, as Mr. LeBrun and Mr. Seitz and so of the NCSD, are here for questions.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know who best could answer this question, but... Mr. Schneider raised some issues about the potential inequities among the different water purveyors and the assessments and how there might be a better approach with those other purveyors using a rate-based formula. And I would like someone to respond to those comments.
Certainly, I would be glad to provide a partial response, and if any of the others would like to follow up as well, I think that would be invited. There was a couple of issues that were raised by Mr. Schneider. One was parcels that were included or excluded from what might become of an assessment district. You know, today's action doesn't actually identify parcels. There is no boundary. It's simply the question of whether or not NCSD can proceed independently. And then, of course, this is only policy direction. But the point there is that parcels that he has identified that should be excluded from the boundaries of assessment district would be a subsequent action to today. He also spoke to the issue of circumventing the Public Utilities Commission, the PUC, because certainly some of the parties that are involved, Golden State Water, is a PUC-regulated company. And this is a similar situation that we've been speaking to in Los Osos. To the extent that a project is incorporated into the rates and charges of a PUC-governed entity, then they have to go through the Public Utilities Commission to do that. But to the extent that a project is developed on a, for lack of a better word, a joint venture, and those become assessment related, then we follow Proposition 218 and the state constitution with respect to assessment districts. So like many terms of financing of infrastructure, there are different paths that we have to follow in order to develop different types of financing structures. And with a PUC regulated entity, if it's through their rates and charges, then they have to go through the PUC. But that is not subject to the assessment district itself specifically. The issue about how costs are allocated for the project between the different entities, one is we do know that there's provisions associated with the groundwater litigation that has some driving force as to how some of the costs are allocated. With respect to assessment districts themselves, the state constitution identifies that only an engineer registered by the state of California is allowed to do an engineer's report that identifies special benefits and that allocates costs underneath an assessment district. But to the degree that there's an interagency relationship between these different water purveyors and there's some degree of negotiations on how they share those costs, again, those are subjects of independence of those agencies, and none of those issues are really the purview of your Board of Supervisors. So they are all important, and certainly they will, to the extent that NCSD and the other parties are able to explain to the public that they have addressed all of those issues and they seem as equitable as possible, then they'll get more support from property owners in the ultimate vote. And to the degree that those issues are not well defined or well laid out for the public, then it's likely they would get less support in the ultimate property owner vote. But that also, to me, sort of addresses my general observations of the public comment is that there is a certain degree of public perception that your board has an authority that simply doesn't exist here. For example, one member of the public had said that your board might lose control over the groundwater in the Mesa. And the fact is that your board really doesn't govern the groundwater basin of the Mesa. That is a subject that is the jurisdiction of the courts and very much debated and deliberated and findings and determinations made through the groundwater litigation. I already addressed issues of cost allocations and spreads that are not, and even on the environmental impact report, you know, your board does not certify the EIR. So certainly it's understandable that there are a lot of issues that the public is concerned about, costs, alternatives, making sure that everybody understands what's out there and what's being reviewed and proposed and whether this is the best solution for the Napomo Mesa or whether there's better options and everything. But that bigger picture of the groundwater basin and the nature of this project, for the purposes of today and proceeding with an assessment district, is really, is the county going to form the assessment district under the 2010 agreement and conduct the assessment vote, or is NCSD going to have the permission to go independently? Ultimately, though, the property owners are going to do the vote.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Meacham?
Just quickly, as you just mentioned, Pablo, ultimately it will be the voter that makes that determination, but if the NCSD does the assessment or the county does the assessment, the dollars, it doesn't really matter, does it? I mean, it'll be determined by the voter.
That's correct. The assessment spread has to be done by a registered professional engineer. The burden of proof is on the public agency and that registered professional engineer in determining the assessments per parcel, okay. But the vote is ultimately the property owner's vote.
Thank you.
Mr. Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you clarify something, Mr. Ogan? I certainly have a certain amount of experience with assessment districts and the allocation of special benefits. I can't bring to mind where that knowledge comes from immediately, but you'd indicated that, we have the engineer's report that shows the special benefit of attributable to each property. You then said something about negotiations between the separate entities that could change that or not?
Not change the issue of the assessment spread, but those costs that are not covered by the assessment district, because there's always two different components to a project.
Okay.
Capital costs that are covered by assessment district and then operating costs that are covered by rates and charges. And those, my understanding is some costs are specified in the groundwater litigation, but some may be subject to negotiation.
And I've heard of the rates and charges process as well. we were operating under the MOU of 2010. We're being proposed to shift to a different setup, and I'm wondering, or you know, shift responsibility solely to the NCSD. Is there anything that changes in the formation of the assessment district in doing that? And let me give you the specific example. I'm looking on page 14 of our staff report, and under the 2010 agreement, section 2 lists the duties of the CSD. And there's a long paragraph there, you know, explaining that they're going to hire a registered professional engineer and deliver a detailed engineer's report consistent with Article 13D of the Constitution and so forth, which strikes me as the business of how you've set up an assessment district, and the county's just being sure. And then I look at the resolution that's proposed on page 31, which I guess comes from the NCSD, and down at the bottom of that there's a section 3, and if we approve this, you know, it's conditional on compliance by the Napomo CSD with the provisions of the assessment law in undertaking the proceedings. Is that the same set of duties in the MOU as is listed in a much simpler form in the resolution?
The best way that I can characterize it is all of the preliminary work is still going to be conducted by NCSD and the assessment engineer under the 2010 agreement. All that setup is the same no matter what.
That has to happen as part of forming any assessment district,
right,
with mm-hmm. special benefits?
That's correct.
Okay.
Under the 2010 agreement, then, your board does the formality of creating the assessment district and conducting the vote, versus under this alternative action that's in front of your board today, NCSD would form the assessment district and conduct the vote. Now, under both scenarios, it's the burden of the proof on the public agency, whether it's NCSD or whether it's the county, in order to show that the assessment spreads are appropriate. Under the 2010 agreement, NCSD essentially indemnifies the county so that if the county got sued on it, NCSD would have to, you know, back it up and defend it.
Actually, this resolution indemnifies the county as well.
And under this approach, yeah, we would not be going into the formation and the assessment district spread. They would still be indemnifying the county on that more limited action. But in either case, you know, again, the substance of the development of the project, the evaluation of the alternatives, the certification of the EIR, all of that substance associated with the project has already been led by NCSD, and there's no proposal to change that particular action.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Further questions, Mr. Teixeira?
Thank you, Chairman Hill. Mr. Ogred, if the assessment district does go with the NCSD, what's the guarantee for the other people outside the NCSD boundaries that they will be somewhat protected? Where it is now, the county is kind of like the overlying agency, and it covers NCSD, Rural Water, and Golden State. But if we pull out of this and NCSD takes control, what's the protection that these other people have?
It's my belief that their protection is the same no matter what, because in the assessment district itself, whether it's led by NCSD or whether or not the county conducts the vote, again, it's the burden of proof is on the public agency in the court of law. So the grievance that somebody might take if they don't believe it's done properly is to the courts. It's not, you know, to your board. It's not to the NCSD board. I mean, certainly from the general authority of your board, you could deny outright NCSD proceeding. You can just say, no, we're not going to allow you to do that. And to some extent, you know, the idea here is there is some public comment that would say don't let them move forward. But if the assessment district does move forward, you know, the ultimate the grievance on those assessment districts is in the courts. Prior to that, the ultimate vote is of the property owners. It's not of NCSD boards or Rural Water Company's board or Golden State Water Company's board or your board. It's of the property owners. And the reason why staff, you know, just is strong on these recommendations is that it just doesn't seem consistent with, you know, a public policy issue to stop them right now. They have spent a lot of years in the development of their project. They have clearly done alternatives. It's clearly an project that was identified as a physical solution in the groundwater litigation. We don't want to go so far as to say that we're going to overspeak the project, because we do not know at the county level the details of this project. We don't know the details of the alternatives analysis. On its surface, we know clearly that there's a groundwater issue in Napomo. And certainly, because they have done so much work, we do think it's appropriate for them to be able to proceed to the property owner vote. But ultimately, it's not an issue of somebody losing, you know, their authority through the Board of Supervisors, because it's going to be their vote. It's going to be the property owner's vote. And if people are opposed to it because they think that there's technical flaws, then their, you know, grievance is still with the court of law. So I don't know. So
it wouldn't behoove us to be somewhat of an uninterested third party to oversee that this is done on a fair playing field for everybody?
Well, certainly it is within your board's purview to be able to, you know, look at all of the details of what's being proposed and to sort of give a thumbs up or a thumbs down. That would undoubtedly create, you know, another level of review of the project. It could have influences on either creating more support for the project or creating more opposition for the project. Honestly, I don't know which way that might go. But with respect to the fact that the county's not a pumper on the Mesa, and this is a work effort that has been primarily led by the pumpers on the Mesa, in some respects, it's the sort of the local control issue. And, you know, if in the event that the assessment district doesn't pass, then it might be something that the county, you know, weighs in a little bit more on. But that's the best I can provide.
Thank you.
Mr. Meacham?
Pavo, we heard some testimony that for us to gather more information. I'm curious, what other information would be necessary to make a determination whether one or the other should be the lead agency?
I don't really think that there is. I think the issue of who should be the lead agency is a very simple issue. The additional information, it really gets into, again, the pros and the cons of the project, whether or not NCSD has put out adequate information, whether there should be more information. And that is what I believe is really the information that's subject of the debate of property owners on whether they vote up or vote down the assessment proceedings.
Okay. Mr. Patterson?
Yes, I just want to comment. This issue, the issue of the groundwater situation in Napomo, has been before this board for a number of years. I do think it is time to act, and this board did initially assume the responsibility of creating this district when we thought that was a requirement because of the other water purveyors outside the boundaries of the Napomo Community Services District. But in finding out that the Services District could indeed create this assessment district, I think it's appropriate that we allow them to do that. I think they're in the best position to move the issues forward, to educate all of the water users overlying the Napomo Mesa management area. And I think it simply is a matter of educating the water users in that area, moving forward with the assessment district vote. And moving this forward. It's been years since the initial litigation and the judge's ruling, and I think it's time to act. And it only gets more expensive the longer we wait. And so I would support the staff recommendation to let the NCSD create the assessment district and do the engineering and do the educating of the water users in the area, and move this forward.
Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support what Mr. Patterson just said, and I want to emphasize to those who come to speak to various sides of this issue that it's not that if that's the action of this board this afternoon, it's not a value reflection on the project. That is, through Proposition 218 and the California Constitution, it is those who will bear the cost that will eventually have the decision making on this. And I would assure all folks, I hope I could assure folks, even as you wade through a fairly information-dense staff report, that what happens in the formation of this district, should it go forward, doesn't change really between how it was and how it might be if this action is passed. If the CSD is to proceed with this, they have a high legal standard to meet in terms of getting information to the public. I think it's absolutely a good thing to have a robust discussion of the pros and cons of the proposal put forward. But it really was, in fact, the county simply being accommodating to bring that question to the affected residents of the Mesa that led us into the MOU of 2010 in the first place. Mm-hmm. So I think Supervisor Patterson has said it well, and I will support that motion should it come forward.
Yeah, and I would also agree with those comments, and to answer Ms. Versaw's comment, and I know Ms. Versaw and like her quite a lot, you know, this doesn't represent a real judgment from us at all. This is just a formality in a way, as was mentioned, I think, by Mr. Ogren, to provide the best means of local control on this very important issue. So we're just basically enabling the NCSD to create the district, and everything else is going to be upon their shoulders. So I would support it, too. Is there a motion, Mr. Teixeira? Do you want to make one? Or?
Move to approve staff's recommendation on allowing NCSD to go forth with their assessment district.
And I'll second it. And if there's no further comment, Madam Clerk, a roll call, please.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
And Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Okay, and as we said before, we hope that those on each side of this will continue to engage with each other for a community solution that really represents the best interest of all the folks. So we thank you for coming out. We are adjourned until next Tuesday, so have a good evening.